Steve's description of the day is about as accurate as you'll hear.
Not a pretty day.
Not a pretty day. I think that's, you're not overselling it, you're not underselling it, you're just being as honest as you can be. It's not a pretty day.
You know, I think the winter was so mild that I wasn't dying for spring like typical. I don't know. It's April 7th. It shouldn't be this way.
We'd like it to be more pleasant, please. As I've been watching the baseball games, and it's unfair because both the Cubs and the White Sox are playing on the West Coast. They're playing in California, and California's nice.
Wait till tomorrow.
Almost all the time. Yeah, it's going to change dramatically as they head more toward home. But you just see it, and you go, yeah, that's kind of what I'm in the market for, is a nice day in the high 70s.
It'll get
mild.
There.
It will.
It's just a little moody today. It's like PMS day. A little
That's
bit.
What Bill and I were saying. Exactly. Yeah.
We had described it that way too.
Some sunshine for a second, then some snow.
Snow pellets, very loud. I don't know if it played out this way in your car, but very loud snow.
I just had a cloud follow me around,
That's
which
all
I
was?
Do every day. But
bad luck, Schlepp Wendy. Was there a
bad
cloud?
Luck? What?
Bad luck, Schlepp Wendy. There was a guy. Remember when they made there was a cartoon that was a sequel to the Flintstones, and it was the Pebbles and Bam Bam Hour.
Yes.
And there was a character on there named Bad Luck Schlepp Rock who always had bad things happen to him.
No.
And a cloud would
I bet there
him.
Are 10 people in the city who remember that.
No,
I remember that, but it didn't sound well with the way you put it together.
Bad Luck Schlepp Wendy.
Yeah, that doesn't sound.
Schlepp Rock.
Schlepp Rock sounds so much better.
That sounds better. All right, from now on, I should go with that one. You're right. You're absolutely right. But it will, I mean, at some point, yesterday I woke up, and the first thing I do when I wake up is I open my eyes.
I would have guessed that.
First thing I do, open both eyes simultaneously, and then I go to the window. We've put a window in our home, and I open it up, and I look outside to see what sort of a day is ahead. And it was just as gray as could be, and I moaned. I went, oh, and my wife said, it's going to be like this 8 out of the next 9 days. They're expecting just gray and rainy and snowy. That's no law of averages. Give me some good days and some bad days. Not all gray, 8 out of the next 9.
What makes today great is if you check at the Google Doodle. It is a sitar, and it's in honor of Ravi Shankar's 96th birthday.
Happy birthday to him.
And he's still alive.
Oh. Yeah.
Well.
Wait. Right.
I'm telling you, if something happens to Ravi Shankar tomorrow, never mention another name on this show, ever.
I get so many people saying, you're deliberately, and by me, I think they mean both of us, and maybe you too, Steve, just by being so close by, you are killing people. You are, on a daily basis, killing people, and we're not.
Do not put that on me. No.
I think by association, Steve.
I don't think so.
No?
I think it's just you.
Why do you say that?
If something happens to Ravi Shankar tomorrow.
Now, you brought him up.
I'm hearing music. Isn't the sitar beautiful? You don't like it?
I like it.
It's like
a portable
harp.
Could you go and see a sitar show for 90 minutes?
I was high as hell.
Yeah, that would be, even then.
I could do it. This isn't what it always sounds like.
I'll really play part of a different music then.
Pull up another Ravi Shankar.
Try to tell the difference.
What's that one you liked, Kevin? There was some Ravi Shankar.
Prebuji. It's George Harrison.
That one.
I'll get it.
He once asked George Harrison to wear a disguise. Did you know that?
Because why?
When the Beatles guitarist George Harrison visited Ravi Shankar in September 1966 to learn how to play the sitar, which, you know, is kind of a great thing to go, I'd like to play the tuba. I'm going to go to Alexander's ragtime band home and learn how.
I want to play a musical instrument, but I don't want to have to stand up while I'm playing it. Who can stand up and play it?
Well, you sit cross-legged. This is beautiful. He and George.
This music smells like incense.
You know, it's funny that you're having this conversation today after yesterday, talking about whether all country music sounds
right,
the same.
Right, because it does all, doesn't it?
George went to visit.
Wait, while you do this, can I put beads up in our doorway?
I wish you would.
All right.
And then put some around your neck. We can celebrate Mardi Gras, too.
All right.
Ravi asked George Harrison to alter his appearance so they could avoid being recognized. It didn't work, as Harrison was identified by the elevator boy at the Taj Mahal Palace. Weren't you identified there once?
More than once.
And the Tower Hotel in Mumbai. Soon crowds began to gather, and the pair were forced to live on a houseboat where the sitar lessons could continue.
Oh.
Isn't that kick?
Yes.
Ravi Shankar began his musical career as a dancer.
Didn't know that. He was a regular dancer or a sit dancer? Everything he did, he's like, I'm not getting up for this.
Listen, sitar doesn't mean that you sit down while you play it.
Can you stand and play the sitar?
Of course you can.
Well, that's false advertising.
I only think of him sitting.
Yeah, me too.
So you have to be getting along while you're playing it?
Yes. Yes.
Well, he was a dancer, Ravi Shankar, in his older brother's troupe at the age of 10 before turning his attention to the sitar at age 18.
Wait, he wasn't part of the dancing Shankar brothers.
Yes, he was.
I didn't know that.
Well, happy 96th birthday, and you will survive.
Yes, absolutely.
Check out the Google Doodle. It's just really cute. I am hooked on the Google Doodle.
For people who don't know, when you go onto Google on a special day,
is there one every day?
Every day it's something, you know.
Mm. There were a lot of cute little things for Black History Month. Mm. And so now it's a little Google Doodle, and then you click on the actual doodle itself, and it tells you why that doodle is there.
Puts on a show for you.
I am on Google probably 78 times a day.
Never noticed that, did you?
Never noticed the Google.
Are you kidding me?
No, I just don't see it.
It's Wendy's highlight of her day, Steve.
It is. Your highlight is opening your eyes.
I like opening my eyes every day.
I like checking the Google Doodle.
Any day I can open my eyes is a win, in my opinion. All right, let's do this. A quick break. A big show for you. A man with 111 things will be by in a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I got to say, if it was my last meal, if I'm getting the electric chair,
I would go thin pizza. You could actually hold the uncooked pizza on your lap on the chair. And they could heat up
the chair. Who needs a pizza oven?
Right.
Brick oven? No. Electric chair.
I need
pizza.
A couple more volts. Just a couple more, and I'm ready to eat.
This just in, Ravi Shankar dead.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
But we didn't kill him.
He's been dead.
Mm-hmm.
He's been gone for a while.
But Google is just honoring his what would have been, I should have said, his 96th birthday. That's a little misleading, Google people.
Yeah. Yeah. And do we know he's the father of Norah Jones,
yep.
Correct? Singer Norah Jones, who's really very, very talented.
She is, although what has she done for us lately?
It's been a little bit of downtime, I think, for Norah Jones. She had a string of hits a couple of years ago, and now we're waiting for more.
And I believe she started a whole new way of chick singing.
Like what?
I don't know how to describe it, but kind of yodely, but pretty... just kind of a different type of sound that a lot of women singers
do. Yeah, I guess I can see
that. I don't know if
that.
She was the first, but it was definitely, you know, when grunge started, a lot of grunge people did. Basically what you said yesterday, all country music sounds the same.
I hate to say that because I know there's people who just love country music. And if you do, I'm not trying to talk you out of it. But for me, I have a very untrained ear when it comes to that sort of thing. Almost every country song sounds the same to me. I hate to say it.
Like original roots country.
Yes.
Because now country doesn't sound like country to me.
It's expanded quite a bit in the last several years, but whenever anyone's singing, this sounds awful, but in my head, it's Conway Twitty and the guy who's listening to it.
It's only make-believe. That is a great song.
Yeah, I guess.
What kind of music do you like?
Gregorian rhythmic chants.
You like the monks.
Yeah, that's my music. That's all. My iPod is filled with rhythmic chants. I love it.
Norah Jones was born Geetali Norah Jones Shankar.
Oh, and she shortened it a little bit. Now, he must have been, forgive me on my math, but I'm figuring her to be in her early to mid-30s, and he died in his mid-90s a few years ago. So he had to have been about 60 to 65 when he fathered her.
Men can do that.
Oh, I know.
Women, not so much.
It's harder.
Although Janet Jackson is pregnant now.
Yes. Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
She was born in 1979, Bill. So if you want to do the math, he was 96.
He was 96 when he died. Oh,
no, today. See, I can't do it.
I'm going to do the math, and then the people who put out the ACT test.
You just said he was 96 when he died. You just said that.
He was 96 when he died.
No, he's 90. He would be 96 today.
Today.
So he was born 96 years ago. So you start with that.
All right. So he was
born. See, I can't do math on the fly.
In 1863.
No, he wasn't.
There's going to be a phone call from the ACT people. They've just subtracted 3 points from my test. All these years later, they're listening to this going, we gave that guy a pretty high score. We have to amend that.
See, I can come up with the formula. Today would have been Ravi Shankar's 96th birthday.
Yeah,
so
he was born in 1920.
Okay.
All right.
And she was born in 1979.
All right. So he was 59 years old.
That's not that old.
When she was born. Yeah.
Dude, it's knocking on our door.
Right. But can you imagine having kids at the age of 59? I mean,
I'm not 59.
No, I mean, but having
a fresh one?
Yeah, a new one at the age of 59 would be a challenge, wouldn't it?
Maybe you're more patient at that point.
Maybe.
You kick into your retirement fund.
Maybe.
You know, the pressures of the work life is not on you.
Tony Randall died 15 years ago. He had a kid Wednesday. He's still having children. No one knows how he does it.
Is he in the Guinness Book of World Records? Because he was one of the oldest dads.
I think,
in his 80s.
Right. Was he 81 when his last child was born? He had two kids toward the end of his life. And I think he was the first one he was 78 or 79 and then 81 or something.
Good
that's
for him.
That's hard to do. I'll tell you how you figure it out. Ravi Shankar is 96 years old, so you subtract his age from Tony Randall's age, and you multiply by Art Garfunkel, and then you know how old he was.
I like the way you think. I really do. He was 75 years old, and he married a 25-year-old chick named Heather.
Wow.
Good for him.
I bet her parents were thrilled.
It's Tony Randall.
Right.
They would have been. They were big fans of The Odd Couple.
Right.
The couple lived in a Manhattan apartment and bought a vacation apartment in Key Biscayne in 2003. They had two children, Julia and Jefferson, and remained married until his death in 2004.
Yep.
So, yeah, he...
He was up there.
Wow.
That's phenomenal.
Oh, Tony Randall died in his sleep.
Yep.
Isn't that the way you want to go?
In Tony Randall's sleep. I want to die in his sleep, not in real life. All right, let's take a quick break. Steve will give you the news. And then, I'm not kidding. I know this sounds like I am, but I'm not. Rob Greenfield will be our guest. He has 111 things. That's it. He has 111 possessions. No more.
See, I think it's astounding that he can count how many things he has, because there are things that are hidden or stuffed in a junk drawer that you're unaware of.
Right. Not him. Not Rob.
I should have him come clean my house and declutter.
That'd be perfect. Here's a quick break and then the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Thank you, J.A. It's us. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, along with our guest, Rob Greenfield. Rob Greenfield is an adventurer, an activist, a man who just wants to make the world a better place. He's here to inspire positive social change, and he's doing things that surprise some of us. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
You're very well. You're far away, aren't you? Are you in Guatemala right now?
What are you, psychic?
Yeah. I'm in Guatemala.
I take it a piece of luggage and a phone are two of your 111 things.
That's right. It's not a phone. It's an iPod Touch. But those are two of them.
Rob, the reason we're having you on, and there's a lot to talk to you about, but the thing that really caught Wendy's attention and my attention is the fact that you only have 111 possessions in the world. That's not a lot, Rob.
No, it's not very much, and it's taken years and years for me to be able to say that, because I used to have a lot of stuff.
We all have a lot of stuff. I am a cluttered mess at work, at home, my desk. I'm not dirty, per se, but I can't find a place for things. Now, isn't that a good sign that I have way too much stuff?
It's definitely a sign that you have way too much stuff.
So what do you do? You got to purge, obviously, but how do you know what to keep and what to get rid of?
Well, for people that are actually feeling like they have too much stuff, and some people love all their stuff and they don't want to get rid of anything, and that's fine. But for people that actually really want to get rid of stuff, I guess one of the biggest things for me was I would look at the things I had and I hadn't used it a year, and I thought to myself, well, I could find a better place for this to get used, either donating it to a thrift shop or giving it to a friend who would use it more or something like that. Rather than it sitting around unused, I would do my best to put it to good use elsewhere.
And your cutoff, Rob, normally is a year. You look at something and you go, wow, it's been a year since I've used that. What do I need that for, huh?
Yeah, well, it can be 6 months. It can be a year. And as I've said, it's been about 5 years of downsizing for me.
It took that long.
What I was doing... Yeah, it really did take a long time. And what I would do is every year or so, I would go through all my stuff, and then I'd say, well, I haven't used this since last time, so I don't need it anymore. And so it could be 6 months, it could be a year. And the thing is, to do it all at once would have been a huge shock.
Sure.
But I every single time I thought, huh, I could have gotten rid of that last time. But if I realized that if I had gotten rid of everything, it might have been doing it too fast and it might have thrown me off.
Rob Greenfield is here, an adventurer, an activist. He only has in his whole life 111 things. Rob, I'm not going to criticize you, but you have the world's worst coin and stamp collection.
Yeah, well, and I used to collect stamps and coins.
Did you really? Yeah.
But and when you so began your problem.
No, actually, as a kid, I collected everything: rocks, cards, pogs. I had 700 Beanie Babies when I was in about fifth grade.
See, that's the weird thing is some of our brains are one way where we think to ourselves, and I'm one of those people. I like collecting stuff. I like seeing something and going, I'll add that to my collection. But the opposite way of thinking, and my wife is like this, and you've become like this, is to say, what do I need this stuff for? It just takes up space.
Absolutely. And it really depends on what you're going after. Like, some collections make a lot of sense, like a music collection, for example. The way I look at it is, if something really serves your best interest, then it's a good idea to hold on to it. But if it actually bogs you down, if it actually means spending a lot of money continuously that you don't want to be spending, maybe it doesn't make sense. I found that with a lot of possessions, the more I had, the more insurance I needed to pay for, the more things would need to be repaired. And so it often meant working more to own my stuff.
But, you know, an interesting thing is my husband collects Star Wars action figures. I collect old-time radios. I have about 20 of them, and they're scattered all over the house. But our collections are the ones that are we take care of, and they're displayed properly, and they're dusted. The other stuff is just a collection of stuff, is really what it is.
Yeah.
So if you are passionate about something, it makes sense to have a collection. But you say, you know, you donate it to thrift stores. My problem is, you know, I'll get a couple huge lawn bags full of stuff, and I'll donate them. And while I'm there, I kind of shop and find some things and bring stuff back.
Well, one way is, when you're looking at something, ask yourself, do I really need this or do I just want this? And if you really are aiming to live a simpler life and trying to downsize, that's one of the most important questions. Do I really need this or do I just want this? And then to take it a step further, now if I want this, will I actually use it? Will it actually be something that is worthwhile having in my house?
Rob, true or false, you once went a year without taking a shower. Could that possibly be true?
Soap not in your collection?
It's true. I actually went 1,000 days without taking a shower.
Wow.
I took my first shower in January of this year.
How long was it?
Chicago.
How long was that shower?
Maybe 4 minutes, maybe. It was a short shower. But I do have soap. I have a very simple organic biodegradable soap in my 111 possessions. The point of not showering wasn't, what I was doing is I was bathing in natural sources like lakes and rivers or even interesting things like leaky fire hydrants in Brooklyn or things like that.
Yeah.
And it was just a crazy way to get people thinking about how much water we use on a daily basis.
What sort of reaction, though, were you getting from people who were within, like, 1,000 yards of you? Were you getting a negative reaction?
You know, I wish I was in studio with you guys right now so you could see just how fresh I smell.
Yeah?
Yeah, come and sniff me, Rob would say.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing the preconceived notions that we have about personal hygiene. One of the things that I'm working to get people thinking about is a lot of us think that we need 30 different products on our shelves just for our body to function. And
yeah,
I've found that we don't need all these things like deodorant, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, face wash for our body to work. And also, if you look into those things, sometimes they actually can make things worse by drying out your skin,
right,
or making your body dependent on something it didn't need in the first place.
I agree with that. What are you doing in Guatemala right now? And how big? Did you just bring like a little lunch bag full of your clothes to bring to Guatemala since you don't have very many clothes?
No, I'm traveling with every possession I own. That was the idea of having 111 possessions, is that I have them all with me for all of my travels, whether I'm in the United States or abroad, and they are all things that I really want to have and that I find really useful.
Do you have a Band-Aid on your person?
I don't have a Band-Aid, and of the 111 possessions, I realized there's a few that I would like, and one of them is not a full-on first aid kit, but a little bit of first aid, especially iodine.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I actually don't have that I need.
If you have that first aid kit, though, Rob, would that count as one thing, or would the individual items in the first aid kit count as more than one? You know, I don't want to mess you up.
That's the problem. For me personally, it would count as probably 10 possessions. If I got all the first aid items I need, it would count as 10. Because, for example, my possessions include, you know, toothpaste as a possession, my driver's license, my birth certificate, my social security card, all these things.
Do you have a slide whistle? Because I'm hearing a slide whistle in the background.
There's a bird or something. Do you have a bird? Is that one of them?
That's a rooster, I think. So to answer your question, what I'm doing in Guatemala, I'm doing my permaculture design course. So I'm learning permaculture, which is basically how to live, grow food, build in a way that works with the land rather than against the land. It's pretty cool.
That's excellent. That's great. Now, I know you're traveling with a girlfriend currently, Rob. Was she of the same mindset as you about being so minimal and how many things you own, or did
and
you have to convince
showering?
Her? Yeah, that's a hard sell a lot of times with the ladies.
Yeah. So Cheryl came from a similar background as I did. I'm from Wisconsin, actually. She's from New York, and we both grew up with a fair amount of stuff, but we've really woken up to how our lives cause a lot of environmental destruction through stuff, through all of the resources that we use. And so over the last 5 years since we've met, she's on the same path as me. She's not she's nowhere near as extreme as I am.
Yeah.
But she's all about cutting back her possessions, having what she needs and not what she doesn't, and living a life that she can feel really proud of that doesn't cause so much destruction to the environment.
How many things do you think she has? You have 111. Does she have a lot more than you, or just a few more?
So she's carrying about 200 possessions. She's counted them, and then
she's greedy. I think she's greedy.
Since we're traveling, since we're both traveling indefinitely, she's got four medium-sized boxes worth of stuff back in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
plus the backpack she's carrying. So she's minimized pretty drastically.
Boy, it sounds like it. That's great.
All right, so what's next for you? You're learning how to grow stuff, and then you're going to eat it. And what's next?
Well, actually, one of my next big adventures that I'm really excited about is going to be in New York in September. For 1 month, I'm going to do the opposite of this. I'm going to live just like the average American.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to eat, shop, and consume just like the average person in the United States. The catch is that I have to wear every single piece of trash that I create.
Huh.
So after 1 week, I'll be wearing 30 pounds of trash. After 1 month, at an average of 4.5 pounds a day, I'll be wearing 140 pounds of trash. And I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, please keep in touch with us, Rob. We would like to follow your mission, your exploits. We can also go to robgreenfield.tv.
That's correct. And you can follow me on social media. If you just YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, type in my name, Rob Greenfield. And I try to keep things pretty entertaining and exciting while teaching, you know, some kind of important things.
I like that your name even has the word green in it, Rob. It all makes sense now.
Yeah, and that's just a wonderful coincidence.
You're very environmentally friendly in all directions. Well, thank you, Rob. This is great. We read the story. We couldn't believe it, and now it makes a lot more sense to us.
Happy to be on, and I'm happy to be on any time.
Excellent.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch with you because you intrigue me, and I'd like you to come to my house and help me clear out some of my crap.
Is that in Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay, well, my family's from Chicago, and I come back every year, so we can definitely make that
excellent
happen.
We could do a nice little video, although I think you'd be shocked at all the stuff I have. Do you want to say hi to your family? Maybe they're listening.
Oh, yeah, sure. Hi, Aunt Louise, and she's the only one that's in Chicago right now that would be listening, but hey, all the Greenfields.
Everyone else is in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, New, they're spread all over.
All right, so we know a bowling ball is one of your possessions, obviously, right?
No bowling ball.
All right. Sorry.
Rob, so nice to talk to you. We'll keep in touch. Hang on a minute, and Kevin, get a direct line to his iPod, and we can call him whenever we need him.
That's amazing.
It is pretty impressive.
Amazing. 111 things.
There's some decluttering tips that this woman, Marie Kondo, put together. She is, I bought her book. It's like a New York Times bestseller. She won't do our show because she's too busy.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, these are tips to help people.
Helpful things.
And we can go through these if
we'll
you don't
mind.
We'll
cover those next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I have some decluttering tips. I really have a problem with this.
Because why?
I can't part with things.
Yeah. It's hard to, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's stupid why I can't.
Well, why do you think you can't? What's the science behind it?
Oh, well, it's funny because I've been getting this acupuncture, which I completely love, and cupping. I get cupped.
Sure.
Every frequently.
Yep.
Every once a week. Now it's down to once a week. And I really leave there feeling so well. And my acupuncturist also does feng shui and meditation she teaches. She's pretty amazing. I'd like her to just live with me. I'd like her to just be my friend forever. And she said, like, the whole science and behind feng shui is negative energy. So you want things to flow. You want your energy to flow. And when I think about all the clutter I have in my house, it stagnates my energy.
Is that what it's doing? Yeah.
It really does. I did karate for a while and really loved it, but I have one knee replacement and need another, so I had to kind of give it up after I hit, I don't even remember, I think I got a green belt or something. I loved it, and I loved the whole Zen end of it.
Right.
I really did. So then I'm like, okay, there's this book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. This woman, Marie Kondo, with a K, K-O-N-D-O. It's a New York Times best-selling book, and we can do it after the news.
Yeah,
but
let's
there
do
are
the news
some
first.
Tips to get rid of things. Her main thing is, does it give you joy? Like, hold the item in your hand and say, does it give me joy? I'm going to hold you in my hand.
And see
Bill
if
gives
I
me
give
joy.
You joy,
I will not stay. I will not recycle him.
I think for most people, though, you say to yourself, if you're throwing something away, I don't know that I'll need this until I don't have it anymore. I go through that all the time. I've thrown something away, and then a day or two later, I go, oh, that thing. I need that thing now.
Yeah, but that makes sense. And we were raised differently. When we were kids, our parents maybe didn't have a ton of stuff. So,
yeah.
And my grandfather was always pretty handy, so he would kind of save things on his workbench that he actually did work on.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, like, here's a for instance. I just changed the light fixture in my kitchen, and I had to cut the wire to adjust it to how low I wanted it hanging in my house.
Right.
Obviously, they give you extra wire because maybe you've got a loft ceiling you want to hang it from.
Yeah.
So I cut the wire, and I couldn't bring it upon myself to throw that wire out.
Just in case at some point you'll
I might
need
have
it
to
again.
Rewire a light.
Right.
But that is my life.
The other day, I put on a jacket that I had not worn in several months.
Did you find money in the pocket?
Not money, but I found a guy's phone number. I found a guy's name, Jerry, and then a phone number. And
no
I didn't
last
want to.
Name?
No, just Jerry. And I'm like, I should throw this away because I don't know who Jerry is, and I probably don't need to call Jerry because I don't know who he is. And I'm just standing by the waste paper basket, afraid to toss it in because then I'm like, what if I need to talk to Jerry? But I don't know who he is.
Okay. See, this is the difference between you and me. I would have called that number and say, I know this sounds really crazy, but I found your name and number in a pocket of a coat I haven't worn in a long time.
Right.
I'd like to introduce myself. My name's Wendy Snyder.
Right.
Why would I have had this number?
Right.
I just want to know who you are. Let's get to know each other. And he'd hang up on me.
Right. He would have screamed and hung up. I was afraid to do that because then once it was determined that I have no idea who he was or why I had his number. Something must have happened 6 months ago where I ran into somebody and they go, hey, call me. Here's my number. Because it wasn't my writing. It was Jerry's writing. But I don't know who he is.
This is a total Jerry Seinfeld episode. Are you sure it wasn't
it was
him?
From an episode of his show. No,
and you think this honestly? If you've gotten by without calling Jerry in 6 months,
never called
there's
Jerry.
Really no reason to
never
do it.
Spoken to him, and except for that one instance, I guess. But I don't.
Aren't you dying to know who that is?
Yeah.
How can you sleep at night?
I don't know.
I can't put anything aside.
Yeah. Well, that was just
one.
You
want me to call him?
I tossed his number away. And I even said, because both my daughters were there, I go, you'll see in the next few days, there'll be somebody will call me and they'll go, do you don't have Jerry's number, do you? Because I need to get in touch with Jerry because I tossed his number.
Jerry!
It's too late. I know. But
how
that's like nearly everything I'm about to throw away. You have that moment where you go, I bet in a couple of days this is going to be something that I absolutely need. And here I am throwing it away.
Has the garbage in the house been emptied yet? Do you want somebody to pick it out?
No, it's long gone. It's long gone.
You will never know.
I don't think I'll ever know. Jerry, call me, because I lost your number. Call me. It's Bill and Wendy. News is next, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Judy Pilak is down here distracting us, and she just got reprimanded by our producer, Kevin.
Right. Sparks are flying in the producer's booth right now.
Judy just got back from Nashville.
Where she sang at the Grand Ole Opry. Did you know that?
You can talk to us.
This is so exciting for Judy. She's always wanted to sing at the Grand Ole Opry, and she had her chance.
Not on the stage, though.
No. She went there, and she sang.
Well, anyone can do that. Sorry, Jude. But
I think it counts.
She fell in love with Nashville. Last year was the first time I went.
Yeah.
Michael went to Columbia College Blues Camp there with Fernando Jones. We stayed for a week. When I came home, the first thing I said to Bill was, I want to move there.
Mm-hmm.
Judy just said the same thing.
So you guys are going to get an apartment
in
Nashville?
Oh, my God, would that be fun. I can get you on the stage at the Grand Ole Opry. It's not old. It's old.
Old.
I should have said O-L that.
Apostrophe.
All right, well, it's funny that Judy Pilak came by because she is the goodbye girl, and I go to Goodwill a lot, and I donate a lot of things. But the problem is when I donate them, on the way out, I kind of look around and bring home stuff, which defeats the whole purpose.
You probably end up with more things at the end of the day than you first brought in to just get rid of, don't you?
Yeah, and yeah. I have trouble getting rid of clothes. Like, even if I haven't worn something, like if it was expensive.
Yeah.
I'll look at it and go, you know, I never really liked this,
mm-hmm.
but I can't get rid of it because it was expensive.
My mom's theory was always like she had closets worth of clothes that were so far out of style. And she'd go, well, they're going to come back style. She always said that about anything. She wouldn't throw anything away.
But some classic pieces do come back in style.
Yeah. Well, she has like suits of armor and things that I'm pretty sure have seen their best day. I don't think we're going to be wearing armor suits anymore.
What if you go to King Richard's Fair?
Oh, all right. Never, I had not thought of that.
I want to come shop in her closet.
All right.
All right. Well, there's a book out by Marie Kondo. It's The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. It's the Japanese art of decluttering and organizing. I subscribe to a lot of ADD stuff because I have it,
mm-hmm.
and this was recommended, this the Kondo method, and they've put together like 8 little lessons that you can learn from the Decluttering Bible. It's sold so many copies. She now has a new book, and we did try and book her, but she's so busy.
She's very busy, but and get the book because then you'll have one more thing just laying around the house. So
I really haven't read it yet.
Sure.
I need to like set aside some time where I have no distractions so I can just focus on this. But this actually puts it together like some 8 key things to do. Tackle categories, not rooms. Because I have to tell you, when you have clutter everywhere but the Star Wars room, you don't know where to start.
Uh-huh.
So it becomes so overwhelming that you just don't start.
So when she says categories as opposed to rooms, because I think in terms of rooms, you got to clean the hall. I got to clean the,
right.
the living
That's what
room.
I would I got to
clean, but she says no.
Well, typically you will tackle clutter by room, maybe the office, just what Bill said. But Kondo's first rule is to tidy up by category. So deal with, say, every single one of your books at once.
Mm-hmm. All right. I can see that.
Otherwise, they'll continue to creep from room to room and you'll never rein in the clutter. And that's really true.
Yeah. I imagine
we get a lot
is.
Of free books here. I still love actual books,
mm-hmm.
like the Cluttering Bible that I got that I haven't read yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they do tend to pile up in different areas of the house. So that's some good advice. Marie Kondo advises beginning with clothing since it's the least emotionally loaded of one's things.
So just go from room to room and pick up anything that has anything to do with clothing. Get rid of those. See, I think this takes longer because if you're doing it room by room, you're in that room cleaning it. But if you're going all throughout the house doing categories, there's a lot more travel time involved.
Yeah, but that, again, it's overwhelming. Like I have a lot of I have a lot of folded laundry in laundry baskets in our room because we haven't gone through the boys' drawers, and it's like they have clothes in there that they wore when they were three.
Stuff that hasn't fit them for years.
Yeah, not maybe three, but still.
Yeah.
So if I went around and just did the clothing thing, it would be like I was on a scavenger hunt, and it would make it fun. And then you decide right there.
That's the key. What you just said is tricking yourself into believing it's some sort of a contest or a game. I think that's the most helpful.
Diane, that method works. Instead of doing room by room, you do category by category?
Yeah, and it actually works. I have a lot of, say, scissors or whatever. And I just put all my scissors, one of our things is put all like things in one area. So when I need a scissors, I know exactly where it is, and when I have to put it back, I know exactly where it is. Not like, oh, do I put this one in the bathroom or the bedroom?
Why do you have scissors in every room of your house?
Well, I don't know. I'm an artist, so I have. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, that
makes
sense.
Yeah. So,
I just like stabbing people.
You guys make my day. I have so much fun listening to you.
Thanks, Diane.
As I go to my studio, I just turn you on to the computer, and I just laugh.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank you.
Thanks. I hope we inspire you.
Oh, you do. And this thing, though, I'm telling you, I'm a bit of a pack rack and a clutter, but I started doing it a year ago, and it so works. Even the folding of the underwear so that it faces you instead of stacking in a pile.
Hmm.
This is one of the things in these eight tips is how to fold something. And
I know
it's pretty amazing because, I mean, typically we all fold a T-shirt and put it in a drawer in a pile. So you have like a T-shirt, another one on top of it. And that's how we've been taught to fold forever and ever. Well, according to this book, there's a way to fold it and you set it up in your drawer so it's upright.
Uh-huh.
And then you can, you don't have to dig through and mess the other T-shirts. You can see what it is because they're kind of in there vertically.
In the drawer.
See how they're folded?
Colors.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good, yeah. Yeah, that makes some sense.
And the same thing with your sweaters and your T-shirts. And, I mean, I do get messy again, now and again, but, boy, I'll get right back to her way because it saves me forever looking for everything but the phone and the keys. I still lose those two things.
Sure. That's never going to change.
Well, thank you
so much. Thanks, Diane.
Thanks. We appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. I have some more tips. But, you know, the hardest part is the maintenance. I mean,
you
can clean up just like dieting. Dieting is easy. It's the maintenance afterwards that's hard because your brain wants to go back to the old way in which you did stuff.
Right. You have to retrain yourself somehow, huh?
So my goal is to first read the whole book.
Good.
And then get to it. Yeah. But it is called, just to let you know, and I paid for mine, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo, K-O-N-D-O. It's going to change my life if I ever get to read it.
I think you'll read it, and you'll see the results. All right, we'll do a quick break. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
My energy is being blocked, okay?
Is there an energy blocking? Is there? Yeah.
And honestly, that's the whole thing of acupuncture is to free your chi, if you will.
Yep.
Chi is energy, runs through your body. Go ahead and laugh at me. I see you rolling your eyes. Chi-chi-chi-chi-ya.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like you're treating a particular issue like a regular Western medical doctor would do. This is just getting your body humming, running smoothly so there's no blockage. Sometimes you have your liver's not functioning properly, and they say, I don't even know if it works, but it works for me.
Uh-huh.
I feel better.
Yeah.
That's all that counts.
Well, that's what, yeah, that's what you want.
Tension in my shoulders, I don't have it anymore. I don't clench my jaw at night anymore. That was huge for me.
All of these are positives.
So, feng shui.
The downside is every time you take a drink of something, it sprays all over your body because you have holes in you now. But you get around that. You'll be fine.
I asked yesterday when I went to my doctor. I want to give her name because it's a really funny name, but then I can't get in when I want to.
Oh.
I said, how many needles do you use typically? And she says it varies person for person. I said, how many did you use on me today? And she said, somewhere between 50 and 80.
You got stuck 50 to 80 times.
Well, they just stay in you.
They do? The whole time you're in there, they just stay in there?
She does my front side first, then my back side, and you lay there with a heat lamp on for like 40 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and it's I walk out of there with no tension.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I mean,
did
it
you ever
really...
find a needle they just forgot to take out? Like the next day, you go,
no,
that's weird.
I always worry about that because she sticks some in my head.
She puts needles in your head? You pay her for that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Wow.
And so she'll like pat my head to make sure she's gotten all the needles out. I know it's really bizarre, Bill, but
I guess
it feels good.
If it feels good, do it.
So if you need to get your energy going in your house, that's what feng shui is all about. And this book, it's the Decluttering Bible, and Karen's on the line. How do you fold your t-shirts?
Hello, the Gap way.
What's the
with
Gap way?
With a cardboard thing?
Trust me, in my other life, I worked at the Gap.
Yeah.
I did work at the Gap.
Pardon?
I did work at the Gap in high school.
Oh, well, then you understand. When you are a newbie coming on board, a new sales associate, they actually have a form that looks like this little skinny plastic form, and that helps you fold the shirts. Now, we're talking shirts. Now, keep in mind, Gap is about style. Gap is about the look. And there is a map when visual team comes out as to how the tables will look.
Yeah.
So once you get the basic shirt fold in and you size them from extra, extra large on the bottom all the way up to extra small at the top, color related, and you want to kill the customer who reaches into the pile to pull out a medium after you've stood there and folded.
We're not all extra small, Karen.
No. Well, this is, but then put it back. Come on. So then you kind of swoop over to customer and go, oh, could I help you find your size?
Don't touch my stuff. That's the nice way of saying don't touch
off.
My stuff.
Back off my pile.
You've disturbed my pile right there that I've just spent the last 10 minutes folding.
Right.
Anyway, that is the Gap way. It looks gorgeous when you walk into that store in the morning, unless you were late at night and then the morning crew comes in and they do the folding. But it is an exact science. Pants are in a certain way. Sometimes you'll have the little jeans showing. I work mainly in kids department, but you'll have, you know, the one leg up, and then they all
get a leg
follow
up.
Suit. It's amazing.
Hmm.
All right, but and that looks good if you have display tables for your clothing in your house, but when it comes to getting them in the drawers, it's a little different. Karen, thank you so much for calling. This way, I don't know if it's best, and I was showing Bill, your t-shirts are vertical up and down in different rows. You can put some cardboard to space it out so you have three rows of t-shirts, not all flat laying on top of each other, like Karen said. These are kind of vertical. They're folded in little things. I guess Sheldon does this on The Big Bang Theory.
Oh.
And you can see what your t-shirt is so you don't have to dig through the pile and mess things up.
Right.
Also, you should respect your belongings. If your closets are crazy and things are just being shoved in a corner, are your hardworking socks really thrilled to be balled up? Just respect your belongings.
Solid.
I don't care about. I think that one's dumb, but I don't know. I haven't read the book yet.
Yeah.
And this is something that you and I have talked about. Nostalgia is not your friend.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And I said this to my acupuncturist. I said, my dad died when I was 10, and I'm hanging on to things. And she said, are any of the things you're hanging on to, did they belong to him? And I'm like, no.
No.
So
just
what is
anyway.
The significance?
I've held on to so many things with the belief that at some point I'll show my children these things, and they'll want to know more about them. Like I kept, I was on a Little League team that won the championship when I was a kid, and I kept the center display piece. We were the Indians, and I kept the it's like a Cleveland Indians hat with all the players' names around it and little flags, and I kept that.
Aww.
And then I showed that to my daughters, and they're like, so? And
I'm like, that hurts.
Don't you want to ask all these questions? Like, who's that guy and that guy? No. And then I realized I've got 1,000 things like that that in my head it's like, well, someday this will lead to a great story. They'll want to know more, but, you know, it's not that way, really.
All right, here's something. Michael went to Ireland, his first, maybe only trip to Ireland. It was great.
Yeah.
When his luggage came home, there's a tag that came from the Dublin airport.
Yeah.
So I peeled it off, and I said, you should save this. And Michael goes, for what?
Right.
I said, oh, it's just a tag to show that you've been to Dublin. He goes, what am I going to do with it?
I know.
And I made him save it. It's like in his underwear drawer or something.
But at some point, 10 years or 20
his
or 30 years ago.
His first overseas trip, doesn't that mean away. Something?
You would think it does, but even he's like, what am I going to do with this? I find stuff like that all the time. Don't you have like tickets to rock concerts
all
that you went
over
to
the
and
place.
You go, oh no, what am I going to do with this?
You know what we have a collection of? Being in radio for nearly 30 years, I have a lot of lanyards where you'd get VIP
right.
passes to go backstage.
Yeah.
I have saved every one of those.
Right. And for what, really?
They're just hanging on a hook in the bathroom.
Yeah, what do you do with those? I've got a ton of them, too.
But I was telling Bill what you got to do. My husband has like a gazillion Star Wars shirts,
yeah.
T-shirts, and he had at one point 8 drawers of T-shirts. And I said, Jim, I got to get into your drawers, is what I said to him.
Sure.
So I said, there are maybe...
That was in your wedding vows. I remember you said that during the wedding.
8 drawers of T-shirts. He wears the same 10 all the time. I said, you know what? Just put them in a box. Let's put them in the attic. I'm not saying you have to throw them out, but get them out of like our day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
That's what I should do with the lanyards.
See if that works. It's not bad.
I got to read this book. I'm just suggesting it. I haven't read it yet, but it is a number one New York Times bestseller, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. I need you, Marie Kondo.
All right, a break. Ryan's got the news, and then Dean Richards will join us to talk about movies. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points, Dean.
He is Dean.
Oh, you can't deny it. If anyone's Dean Richards, it's Dean Richards.
Got
hi, Dean.
Documentation to prove it.
Yep. Birth certificate. A lot of politicians say you were born in another country, Dean, but that's not true.
That's not true. I have all the documentation. Let them bring on their complaints about my birthrights.
Sure.
I'll build a wall around them.
Yep.
That's what I'll do.
That's
I'll build
the right
a wall
way
around
to do
them.
It.
Around yourself?
If necessary. I just want to build a wall around something.
Good.
I don't really care what.
You got to have goals. That's so important. Dean, this morning was the premiere of the trailer for the new Star Wars movie, and by new, it won't be out until December of 2017, Rogue One. Have you gotten to see the trailer yet?
I've seen it about 20 times so far.
What'd you think?
I forget that you love Star Wars as much
you do. I'm going through this thing like it's the Zapruder film.
Sure.
Analyzing it frame by frame. You know, I have no idea what I'm looking at. You know, all the Star Wars fans are guessing, you know, what things mean and who people are and what's happening. But this whole thing is a very interesting concept because the trailer that premiered this morning, is not, episode 8.
Right.
A lot of people thought that this was episode 8. This is...
Because you're talking about it. I heard it this morning, and I'm like, oh my God, how could they have a trailer for the next Star Wars movie
right.
already?
They just started filming it.
Yeah. Right.
They barely have anything, you know, even in the camera yet with that. But what the Disney company is going to do, I don't know if you know that Disney has figured out a way to make money on, you know, virtually everything that they do.
Oh.
I've heard that they put gift shops when you exit the attractions.
Yes.
In their, I've heard they have theme parks.
Yeah,
even.
There's theme parks and everything.
I've heard they've had theme parks, which is really unusual.
Yeah.
But they have found a way to monetize just about everything that they do. And, you know, they spent, I forget how many billions of dollars it was to buy the Star Wars franchise from George Lucas. So now they own the whole thing. And they are cranking out Star Wars product. Like it's, you know, little chocolates on I Love Lucy coming down the conveyor belt. That's how...
Is Ethel in this movie?
They're sticking episodes and figures in their blouses and their hats every place they possibly can. So the thing that came out this morning is the first Star Wars spinoff that is roughly set between episodes 3 and 4, which would have been the first two movies that were released, but are technically episodes 3 and 4 in the chronology of it all. It's a story about a bunch of rebels who are planning to steal the plans for the Death Star.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see a John Boyega in this. You're not going to see Daisy Ridley, some of the characters. You're not going to see any of the veteran characters. All fresh new cast, including Felicity Jones, including Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah. I love him.
Forrest Whitaker, fantastic. Diego Luna is one of my favorite actors.
He's in it.
He is. And oddly, you get a free Bissell rug shampoo when you go see
this
movie.
That's a bargain, Dean.
I think that's Empire, but I'm going with the rug joke.
Empire Strikes Back.
So that's what this thing was this morning that came out. We've got it up on the website. I'm sure. I know it's on WGNTV.com. I'd be shocked if it wasn't on WGNRadio.com.
It's probably on the back of Jimmy Mac's eyelids right now.
Oh, yep. My gosh. I'm telling you, Star Wars fans, we've watched this. I don't think I'm quite to Jimmy Mac's level with this. I've never gone to any conventions or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm just a fan. I've always been a fan of the series. But I've watched this like 20 times this morning. I've annoyed everybody in the newsroom. Nobody wants to sit near me. Nobody will talk to me.
But can you remember, Dean, a time? Now, this movie isn't released until December of 2017. Do you remember a time where they'll release a trailer to a film that far out? Sometimes you'll just see the title or, you know, something very, very fast. But
boom,
this looked
right.
like a full-on...
This was a full trailer. This was like a minute and 40 seconds, something like that. Now, the trailer that came out this morning will be out in December of this year. December of 2017 will be episode 8. That one's going to be episode 8.
Oh.
And what they're going to do is they're going to alternate years. One year you get sort of a main Star Wars movie. One year you get a spinoff. So it'll be Rogue One that'll come out December of this year. Episode 8 that'll come out in 2017. And then in 2018, another spinoff, Young Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to that.
Have they decided yet who's doing the Young Han Solo?
I've not heard that yet. Who's get that plum role? But yeah. that's going to be a good one. I'm not coming out of my mom's basement until I see it.
I'm embarrassed to say that I find the stormtroopers very hot.
Really?
Yeah, I just like the look.
Even though you can't see them.
I just like the black. I know usually that bothers me, but I like the black and white. It looks so sharp.
Sure. Absolutely.
Very minimalistic.
Mm-hmm.
As they kill you.
Yes. Right, there's that.
You gotta get on the good side, Dean.
Dean, I know what movies you want to talk about this week, and before we get to those, I just have to ask you, there's a movie that I've been looking forward to greatly, because it looks like quite a departure from most movies any of us have ever seen, but I don't think you've seen it yet. The Hardcore Henry movie, you've not seen that,
have
you?
I have not. It opens this weekend. I'm going to try to catch it today. I was trying to go see it this weekend. I had some other things going on, so...
What is that about?
Honestly, I have no idea.
I just know it's all told from one character's eyesight point of view. It looks almost like a video game, a lot of action, but you see it like from his viewpoint.
Like you're playing Grand Theft Auto or something?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Wow, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah. I wonder if that holds up over, you know, an hour and 40 minutes. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to see it. I'll get to see it tonight, and we'll talk about it a little bit tomorrow.
Okay. It's fun to be you.
But can I review one other thing that's not movies at all before we get to this weekend
these
movies? And I'm sorry to say that I've forgotten the name of the comedian who was on with you. Was it yesterday? I think the day before.
Andy
Kindler.
Yeah.
I was crying laughing.
He's very funny.
So funny.
Normally when there's a comedian on the show, I, you know, you're driving around, you laugh a little bit.
Sure.
That's funny. That's amusing. You know, I seriously...
Note to us, Bill, don't book any more comedians.
No more comedians.
I had to stop what I was doing because I could not drive while I was laughing
He's
so
very
hard.
Funny.
He was so funny.
Yeah.
Naturally funny, though, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Really, really, really.
He was explaining what the country would be like if Bernie Sanders, a Jewish man, became the president of the United States.
Hilarious.
And yeah, he's really good at what he does. He is.
Absolutely hilarious.
Well, thank you for saying that. I'll pass that on to him. Dean Richards is here. He's going to talk about what new movies are coming out this weekend. Stay right where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. And Dean Richards is here. You know Dean from places that Dean is.
Grocery store?
Yeah, he goes to the store sometimes.
Was it the cleaners yesterday?
Yeah, sometimes. Yep. Pick up some laundry.
Yep.
Dean, a couple of movies opening this weekend. First and foremost, The Boss. This is the new Melissa McCarthy movie. What do you think?
I was slightly disappointed with it.
Looks so stupid, and I love her.
Yeah, I love her too. I like it better when she works with different writers and directors, I'm sorry to say, because the writer, she's the co-writer of this movie with her husband, who also directed this movie. And, you know, it's not a slam against him exactly. I just think that she's better off in the hands of you know, a Paul Feig or you know something where
right.
like her really her best movies have been when they are not you know concocted over her kitchen table.
Yeah,
this is a movie about just really an awful person. It's a character that she developed at, like 15 years ago when she was doing work. I think she told me at Groundlings. I think in yeah. In Los Angeles. It's really the sort of obnoxious character. Titan of business, you know, inspirational kind of financial advisor, you know, part Susie Orman, part, but much nicer, Susie Orman, much nicer than this character, part Susie Orman, part Donald Trump, really.
Oh.
I mean, really, you know, says anything, doesn't care about the consequences, doesn't care who she steps on, really just kind of a financial bully. One day she's busted for insider trading, goes to jail, loses everything, and has to sort of start her life over again. So she moves in with her former assistant, who is just too nice to tell her no, played by Kristen Bell. And, you know, this obnoxious person now is obnoxious with her daughter, a little daughter who's a Girl Scout, and she gets involved in selling... they didn't call it Girl Scouts, they called it something else, but it's essentially the same kind of thing where they're selling cookies and, you know, she's starting to try to build a business up again
mm-hmm.
With the family. Lots, very R-rated, very crude, not especially funny. There are some scenes that are, like, sort of physically shocking, I guess you might say, and in that sense, you giggle a little bit, but the comedy is not that strong. The one thing that I really loved about this movie that is kind of tempering my complete hatred for it is that they filmed it in Chicago. There is a lot of Chicago in this movie. And I love when movies are made
yeah.
here. One, because I'm always looking for my house. But, you know, mostly it brings a lot of jobs here. It you know, hires a lot of people, actors, production people. It's great for people in Chicago. So I like that. And they do it effectively. It's not... you know, sort of the, like, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, they pretend is in Chicago when really it was shot in Toronto. And they
sure.
have a few, you know, there's a few exterior shots where they try to make it slightly look like Chicago. This is the real deal. They get what is cool about Chicago because Melissa is from here. Her husband Ben is from Carbondale, lived here in Chicago for a long time. So they're fans of Chicago. They get it. They understand it. So that part of it I liked. I wish it was a little funnier. It's not as bad as Tammy,
mm-hmm.
The Melissa McCarthy movie Tammy, but it's not also not as good as some of her better comedies that she's had out over the past couple of years. So a little bit disappointed, wound up giving it a B-.
Wouldn't you hope that somebody that she trusts can say to her, look for scripts that are more like St. Vincent if you're trying to carve a career? That's a much better move for you than doing this kind of big, broad comedy.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, some of her big, broad comedies have worked, but I think that should happen. But, you know, I have to wonder when a couple of the films that she's done with her husband, Tammy was one of them,
yeah,
were such complete failures, box office wise and also critically. I wonder if the people who are closest to her aren't even able to recognize that. You know what I mean? That
mm-hmm.
you would hope that you could, you know, turn to your spouse and, you know, say, what do you think of this? And they'll tell you, wow, that is not good.
Right.
That
right.
is a steaming pile of not good.
Right.
Yep.
But she doesn't care. I mean, she's working with her husband, having a great time filming in Chicago.
Exactly.
I
right.
guess she doesn't, you know, why should she care if it's a success? She's
working
arrived.
With the people she loves. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess so. But I mean, I don't know why you just wouldn't try to hit it out of the park every time. It's not awful. You'll have a few laughs in here, but this movie is more like Tammy than it is Spy or
yeah.
the Heat, and certainly St. Vincent. That's in a class all by itself.
Without a doubt. Okay, and then the other big release this weekend is the Jake Gyllenhaal film Demolition. What did you think of that?
This is a mess. This movie is such a mess. Jake Gyllenhaal plays a guy driving along with his wife one day. They're in a terrible car accident. She's killed in the car accident. And he's trying to put the pieces of his life back together again in the most confusing. He's trying to put the pieces of his life together again by demolishing things. I don't mean in anger. I mean in taking things apart, in examining the intricacies of things. It's a movie that has lots of interesting little pieces to it, but all these interesting little pieces don't really come together at all. They just don't make any sense. There are a few funny moments in the film. There's one or two sort of touching and poignant scenes, but mostly there is just one disjointed scene after another that really doesn't further the story of him processing his grief, whether or not he really was in love with his wife in the first place. They put out little subplots and never follow up on them. I think it's just a really messy movie that doesn't make a lot of sense. All we know for sure is that Jake Gyllenhaal loves to do scenes without his shirt on.
Oh.
And why wouldn't he?
And that apparently when you're grieving the loss of your loved ones, the main thing you want to do is shave your chest hair.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
It signals moving on.
Apparently. You know, like when girls have trouble, look at Britney Spears. When she was depressed, she cut her hair all off.
It's regrowth.
Yeah. I mean, it's
that's
a
what it
rebirth.
Is symbolic.
Yes.
It's a metaphorically regrowth. I never even thought of that part. And apparently a metaphoric, really itchy period that you must go through just right after that.
Wouldn't you agree, though, Dean, that when he's on his game, he's one of the more interesting actors to watch?
What was that movie where he played the psycho?
Nightcrawler. Yeah, he was great.
This like weird photojournalist. That was such a great movie. That, in a way, I thought his character was going to be as complex and as kind of disturbed as that.
Yeah.
And then they keep introducing them, and there must be like a half a dozen subplots in there that go absolutely nowhere, that really don't relate to one another, like they did in Nightcrawler. So I was really disappointed with this one. Dean's List D. I'm
afraid, no.
On this one. But then I went home and shaved my chest.
Sure. That'll cheer you right up.
Right.
Smooth.
And I'm doing this segment right now without a shirt on. Take that for a visual
image.
That?
Yum.
Only
the
if you're
like
rubbing your chest while you're talking to us.
Enjoy your lunch with that visual image, ladies
we
and
shall.
Gentlemen.
We shall. It's Dean Richards, everybody. Thank you, Dean.
Thanks,
Have
Dean.
A great weekend.
See you guys.
A quick break, and then we'll find out what's coming up on the Winchest Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Was that you doing the woo?
No, I can't do that.
Usually how I finish off my newscast.
Ryan, you did that? Was it you?
Uh-huh.
I like it. You know,
I've got Ronnie behind me.
Ronnie Woo?
Yeah.
I know that a lot of news guys come up with a signature phrase, and that's the way it is, you know, that sort of thing. But nobody has been bold enough to do a rodeo yell like you just did.
Yeah. My thing is also, it's that, and it's also reading the script the wrong way. It's one of those two things.
I heard you on Steve Cochran's show last week, and at the end, you know, they do this thing, and that's this hour's big story,
right.
But Ryan changed it to, and that's this story's big hour. Do you remember that, Ryan?
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you bring that up and make fun of him?
I'm not making fun. I think that's great. It mixes it up a little bit.
A radio partner I once had and then now have again at 11:30 said it was 1:30.
I did that today.
I almost went home.
Wasn't it 1:30 somewhere? Not here
somewhere.
In Chicago,
I guess.
But on the West Coast, for people listening
right.
in Anaheim, California.
And don't worry, Wendy, my response is always, hey, thanks for listening.
Right.
I know, right. Just spell the name right.
It's better to listen or not. Ryan, answer a question. Wendy and I were debating this during our lunch break just now. We were listening, of course, intently to the Wintrust Business Hour with Steve Bertrand, but we were also discussing...
And your debates also include arm wrestling, correct?
A lot of times they end in arm
Bill
wrestling.
Always wins.
A lot of, not always.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Women have not as strong upper body strength except Michelle Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
You should arm wrestle her.
Yeah. We were trying to determine when this became a thing... That you don't say someone is the President of the United States, you say that he is the POTUS. And you don't say Supreme Court of the United States, you say SCOTUS. And you don't say First Lady of the United States, you say FLOTUS. When, who started that?
I hate that.
I think that's a hashtag thing now. I think it's just easier. Yeah, I think, you know, we live in a fast-paced world. We got to shorten this thing up.
No time to say President of the United States.
You know, usually, just for you future journalists out there, usually you say it.
Right.
You know, when you're typing it.
They won't in the future. It'll be, POTUS says this.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
What?
That's true.
That's what it's going to be.
But yes, that's what that means. President of the United States, Supreme Court of the United States.
I didn't know SCOTUS. I thought somebody was using a derogatory term for.
Well, sometimes they are.
The male area. Easter eggs.
Oh, no, no, no. No.
I thought.
But I will admit, the first half a dozen times I saw that somewhere, I thought it was a rock group or something. I'm like, sure. I thought it was Crocus, like an offshoot band of
You know what
Crocus.
It probably is? It's probably us just being lazy because sometimes we don't want to type it all out, so we just keep it short, and then, you know, eventually someone reads it.
You know what it came from, you guys?
No.
Although I think it started before, but when President Obama got his Twitter account, isn't it?
No, I
think it preceded
that. Yeah, you could see references on the show West Wing. They would refer to FLOTUS
all the way back then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I would not have guessed that far back.
Yeah.
I thought this was in the last maybe 5 years.
I don't like it.
It seems impersonal, doesn't it?
I just don't like the sound of it. There's certain words, like the C-O-I-N word sounds funny. G-R-O-I-N. I don't like the oi.
Any word that has
that
in
there. Yeah,
it
just sounds funny to my head.
Yeah.
And same with POTUS, TOTUS, SCOTUS.
I know.
FLOTUS. I don't like
it. None of them sound good. They have a harsh sound to them, don't they?
You keep referencing TOTUS. I don't know what that would be. TOTUS?
I don't either. I don't know.
I'm not sure either.
Treasury of the United States.
Trump of the United States.
Trump of the United States.
Well, that'll just be Trump, I would think.
Right.
Damn straight.
Yes, it will be.
Huge.
And then here's something else I wanted to bring up. Wendy, you're already aware of this, but, you know, Ted Cruz made a statement not long ago about New York values. And at the time,
he was not in New York.
Well, he was trying to appeal. Was he in North Carolina at the time? I'm trying to remember where he was talking about New York values. But he spun it as a negative. You know, if you have New York values, that's not where we are right now. But now he has to win. It's important for him to do well, have a good showing in New York. So he's backpedaling a little bit. And all the candidates, I have to admit, they're all doing very New York style things. Hillary Clinton is riding the subway train.
You don't think Bernie Sanders usually does that?
Like the way Tom Cruise did in Risky Business?
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen the video from it, but she struggled to get her card to function.
Right.
So
she's the everyday woman.
Yeah. So she's doing that. She's riding the subway. It's a New York thing. John Kasich has joined a street gang because he thinks that's New York. So he's joined a street gang. So now Ted Cruz...
He's really joined a street gang.
No,
I don't know when to believe you sometimes.
Ted Cruz, and I'm not making this up, you know it's true... Ted Cruz's plan is to go to a matzo factory, a bakery that makes matzo crackers. For people who are not aware of them, it's a Jewish cracker.
Unleavened bread, is
unleavened
that what it
bread,
is?
Unleavened bread, and he's going to teach kids how to make matzo crackers.
Why?
To show that even though he has eschewed New York values, at this point, he's one of you, New York.
No, he is so not.
Well, that's the point I want to make with this is, in the history of fish being out of water, has there ever been a fish more out of water than Ted Cruz at a matzo factory? There's no part of that that my brain refuses to even visualize it. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, but that seems so foolish to me because if you have Hillary riding the subway, she's showing she's trying to be like, you know, your average Jane.
Right. Right.
How many average Joes work in a matzo factory?
Not that many.
I mean, he's missing the point there.
I think he is. But it's his or somebody who handles him's way of saying, look, Ted Cruz isn't what you thought. On any given day, he may just show up and make matzo crackers for his Jewish friends.
You know what though? Having covered the candidates up in Wisconsin, Ted Cruz is the one who does these retail stops. You don't see this from Bernie Sanders or, some of the other candidates. Donald Trump certainly doesn't, at least he hasn't in the past done these where he's kind of dropped in and shaken some hands and kissed some babies. We saw him at the Mars Cheese Castle just a few days ago tasting cheese.
Yeah, but he wasn't working back there.
No, he wasn't working it. But, you know, I mean, what this does for the campaign is it creates creates an opportunity for the media to show not just B-roll of you know, standing at a podium, but you know, actually putting foot to pavement and shaking people's hands. And you know, it's very risky though from a political standpoint, because anything can happen. You
right.
know, I mean, Hillary Clinton could struggle to get through the subway system. You know,
right.
Ted Cruz, when he was eating jalapeno bread, could have spit it out or, you know, started crying on scene. So
that would have been great.
There is risk involved, but you know, they want to provide B-roll and opportunities for the media to see them in different forms.
Why not, if you're Ted Cruz, though, go the extra yard and just become a moil and perform a bris? Why stop at making matzo crackers? Go all the way. Show New York that you mean business.
Because no one will watch that video.
By the way, guys, I want to jump in here real quick.
Sure.
President Obama has landed. Air Force One is at O'Hare right now. He is going to head to the south side. It looks like they got some cars out there, because sometimes he jumps in helicopters and takes it down to University of Chicago. It looks like he might be in a vehicle.
Good luck with traffic.
I'm sure Dolly will keep us updated throughout the afternoon, but it looks like he's... I see Dick Durbin looks like he's there. I don't know if Rahm Emanuel. Yep. Rahm Emanuel's there
also
to greet him.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, got to be there to greet him.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. He's a homeboy coming home.
Yeah.
Although you got to understand, he was not used very often in the primary we had coming up. Rahm Emanuel was
right.
not. So none of the candidates really wanted to touch him. So looks like now that Obama is
Obama
is
didn't ask for him to arrive. Rahm just showed up.
It's
I'm
quite
go.
Possible. Mm-hmm. Well, it's his city. He can do what he wants. Right.
Let's do this. A quick break. We've got more show, a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. We were trying to figure out when it became fashionable to no longer say President of the United States, Supreme Court of the United States, First Lady of the United States.
What about POCOTUS?
Who is Picot? What is that?
Presidential candidate
of the United States.
Yeah.
There
All
is
right.
SCOIL. You know, SCOIL.
SCOIL is
What's
what
that?
Now?
Supreme Court of Illinois.
Oh, SCOIL. Oh, all right. All those words have a very harsh tone to them for some reason. We're trying to figure out when exactly this started. Tom may know the answer to that. Hey, Tom.
Bill, Wendy, how are you guys?
Could be better. What's up?
I remember the pilot of the West Wing, and they weren't even supposed to show Martin Sheen. He just kind of popped up in the last 5 minutes. But the big tragedy was that POTUS was in a bicycle accident, and everyone was trying to figure out how he can, like, still, you know, make it to his meetings or you know, not look like an idiot with a cast and something like that. And that's the first time I had heard it. And so it's been around, at least internally, in, like, cabinet circles for a while.
If it's the pilot of West Wing, you're looking at a decade and a half, right? That's about 15 years ago, right?
At least. Probably more than that. Charlie Sheen was still young and good-looking. He's old and good-looking.
Right. Now, right. He's still good-looking. He's just an older version of himself. All right. So it dates back at least to that. But it wasn't in the common collective. People weren't just saying it.
No.
Like, a day doesn't go by now. If you're watching the news or listening to it on the radio or something or on the internet, that's become standard fare the way people describe it. Is that now?
Yeah, that was the first time I had heard it. And it was the Secret Service talking to the staff, and they had, like, I don't know if it was the code name or if it was the general term for president or whatever. But I think Charlie Sheen gets, not Charlie Sheen, the other guy.
Martin Sheen.
They're like exchanging texts or something like that. It has an abbreviation, or maybe it was emails back then. And it has an abbreviation POTUS. And you're a viewer confused by what that means, but then he's got to, you know, rush out of the room and solve some kind of problem or whatever.
Interesting.
Well, I think it goes back even further, Tom. I think it goes back to 1879, and I have a little story to share with y'all.
All right.
Please do.
All right. And by the way, Kevin, TOTUS is teleprompter of the United States.
Teleprompter of the United States.
Yes. POTUS, President of the United States, it's said to be, it's pretty obvious abbreviation, and one that must have occurred to many people down the years, but we're sure its genesis lies with Mr. Walter P. Phillips, a former journalist and telegraph operator who was at the time the Washington Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. He later became General Manager of the United Press Association, and he published his code in 1879. It was primarily valued to streamline the reporting of court proceedings.
Yeah.
So,
but they were doing it, as we said earlier, in writing, so you wouldn't have to write it out. But now it's just said all the time. You know what I mean? Like back then, their original intention was just so that somebody who was quickly scribbling notes wouldn't have to keep writing President of the United States, Supreme Court of the United States. But now people just say it. Like, you know, people just say, well, you did this yesterday, LOL. Instead of laughing, you just go LOL because it's faster.
It is faster. And I'm just trying to be cute.
Right.
But it says that that's where the term came from, where it was actually written out like that. Because do people really say POTUS?
Yes.
Okay, then
I've
bothered
heard that
by
on the
it.
News several times.
All right, well, Tom, I thank you for that information.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Ew.
So we have Walt Phillips to blame for this.
Yeah, it's used by in-the-know staffers, POTUS, with the O being long as in toe.
Yeah.
It is never uttered in addressing him face to face, so you wouldn't go, hey, POTUS, what's up?
Right.
POTUS long ago existed in the telegraph code that was a Bible of the major news wires.
Oh.
And it said that when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt traveled on the Pennsylvania Railroad in his private car Magellan, POTUS was the cover word employed to identify this important passenger.
See, that's a code that would be easily cracked by today's code crackers, right?
It's mostly it's just a shortened way to put him on the schedule.
Yeah.
You know,
but do you think, Steve, it was ever intended to be the way people would say it verbally? I don't think it was.
I think people are just being annoying now.
Yeah, that many? Yeah, maybe.
POTUS's public emergence began when buttons on White House phones linked directly to the president were labeled thus in President Lyndon B. Johnson's time.
Yeah.
The word came into currency during President Jimmy Carter's term, and it was picked up as shorthand by the Secret Service, matching SCOTUS, which was becoming the favorite acronym for Supreme Court of the United States. Nancy Reagan inspired, but may not have originated, FLOTUS.
First Lady of the United States.
Yes.
Or a woman with the ability to float.
Is it the Geico lady or yes. Progressive lady?
And yes. V-POTUS.
V-POTUS.
Vice President of the United States. To indicate the vice president, it was occasionally heard in the same era to refer to George Bush, then holding office. Its use became ordinary when Al Gore was vice president in Bill Clinton's administration. The word VEEP to describe the vice president became popular in Harry Truman's day.
And that's become, even though it started out as just, I don't think it was a full-fledged word at first, but now it is. VEEP, I mean, it's not just a TV show, but that's a word. I've heard people just use it in official capacity. He's the VEEP. He's running for VEEP.
Who says that?
People in the world. I don't have their names.
Pitwa? People in the world?
People in the world. Yeah.
I'm just going to call
now,
you.
Now, if I knew those words were popular when we had our daughters, I have twins, I would have named them SCOTUS and POTUS. Those are beautiful names for girls, aren't they?
Thank God you were not aware.
Oh, man. All right. A lot coming up on the second half of the show, including, I have news about the O.J. Simpson TV movie, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, that even you don't know. I've been withholding information from you, the biggest fan of the O.J. Simpson miniseries.
What will we do now that it's over?
I have an idea for you. I think I know what we're all going to do. All right, so stay where you are. There's a lot more coming up on today's show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. The People vs. O.J. Simpson has come to an end. That's the miniseries where they went through the court case, obviously, of O.J. Simpson. And I know you have not seen the last episode, so I'll be very, very careful. I won't divulge how it ended because you're going to be shocked.
I'm shocked that, what's his name, Cato Kalin was not used more because he was on the stand. He really had a bigger role in what was happening in real life on TV.
You know what? I was trying to figure that out. And as I remembered it, he was a huge part of it in the beginning, kind of like on the series. I don't remember him being as big of a part of it as the court case went on. I remember at the very beginning.
He testified, though.
He did early on, but I don't think they brought him back once he took the stand that first time. I don't remember that. I mean, his name was kind of out there, and he was a Hollywood pretty boy, and I hate that title. Having been called that myself, I hate that title.
It's hurtful, isn't it?
It hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts, Steve. So
people think it's a compliment.
It's not a compliment. I'm here to tell you it is not a compliment. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is this. Now that that show is over, and it was a huge hit, a huge ratings hit.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Can I tell you, Cuba Gooding Jr., terrible OJ. I am going to take that to my grave.
I know. But now they have planned already there's going to be a second season of it wasn't, even though the title of this was The People versus O.J. Simpson, based on the book, the name of the show is American Crime, Crime Story.
Which is difficult when you're looking for it on demand.
Right, right.
Like, just put O.J. That's really all you have to put.
Yeah. So now comes this. What do we do to follow up the trial of the century? Because that's not easy to equalize or top. So here's what it looks like they're going to do. Actually, I should have you guess if you don't already know. Do you know what it looks like they're going to go with for next season?
It's another crime. Well, obviously, American Crime Story. It's a good one, Wendy. Way to pay attention to what Bill's saying.
What do you think? Like what?
Jeff Dahmer.
What? No, it's not Jeffrey Dahmer, although I think that would make for pretty interesting. Or you could also say John Wayne Gacy's court case would be a fascinating court case.
It really would. And not to glorify it in any way, because I felt for the Brown family when this, and the Goldmans.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And the guy they had who played Ron's dad.
Fred Goldman.
Like, dead on.
Yeah, he looked just like him. And the real Fred Goldman said, somebody asked him if he's watching this, and he just said, why would I want to watch this?
And
there's
right,
no reason.
Because it happened, and that's what's weird. You know, I mean, they've lived this already. There's no reason to live through it again. But when we were talking about Jeffrey Dahmer the other day, and not to glorify it in any way, but it would have made it for an interesting story, I thought about that.
Yeah.
Gacy would, too.
Yep, yep. Although, in both of those cases, and in the case that it looks like they're going to go with for the second season of American Crime Story, the crime itself was far more interesting than the court case. With O.J. Simpson's story, it was equal.
It was a circus, as Christopher Darden said.
It was an absolute circus. The court case itself was as interesting. I hate to be disrespectful. I'm not trying to be. The murders were gruesome and awful and horrible, but the court case itself stood up on its own because it was such a media circus.
It was crazy, too, because I watched feeling so sorry for Marcia Clark, because you know what? She did an awesome job.
Yeah.
She had what was going to be an easy slam dunk to prosecute O.J. Simpson, and everything went wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't blame her at all. I'm stalling because I want you to give me a hint.
Oh, boy. It's a court case that I'm trying to think of exactly what year this took place. Between 20 and 25 years ago. And it was a big headline case. It got a lot of attention.
Not the Manson stuff.
No, not the Manson stuff. No. No. Steve, you want to take a shot? Or maybe you already know the answer. Do you know what they're going with for the second season?
You said 20 or 30 years ago?
About 20 to 25 years ago is when this court case took place.
And it was another courtroom circus. It was an interesting court.
Not as interesting.
How can you top the O.J. court scene?
That's the problem. Do you know what it would be?
Did you look it up?
No, I didn't look it up. Jeez.
All right.
I have a brain. It's not just beauty up here. The brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, the Menendez brothers. Yeah. I guess I knew that.
Yeah, it's them. That's what it looks like.
I knew it,
I'm not going to watch that.
You refuse to watch?
Yeah, I don't like them.
Now, Ryan Murphy, the producer, if you watch American Horror Story, uses the same cast members over and over again. So it'll be interesting to see John Travolta and Nathan Lane playing the Menendez brothers.
Now I'm watching. All right, I'm watching again.
I'm not sure they'll do as good of a job with their new assignment as they did in the last one.
And I wonder if Travolta will articulate everything perfectly.
He is currently studying with William Shatner to learn that style of acting. But, I mean, it's sad. Well, it's sad on several fronts, but it's sad because, like I said, you opened up with this trial, and it was such a bizarre, out-of-nowhere-anything-could-happen trial that any other thing that you used to follow it up is going to pale in comparison, but we'll see what happens.
You got to explain the Menendez brothers, though, because...
Well, they killed their parents. Yeah.
That's really all you need to know.
That's it.
In a terribly horrible, brutal way, and then... There was a Chicago connection because Rafer Weigel was engaged to this girl, and this girl broke up with Rafer Weigel, Jennifer Weigel's brother, Tim Weigel's son.
Yeah.
And then she went and married one of the Menendez brothers.
Lyle Menendez, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
That's a little peculiar.
And it's not like you can live in the cell next door to him. It makes it kind of tough when he's in jail.
Yeah. Yeah. But guys in jail...
Get all the chicks. I know what you're going to say.
It's the weirdest thing, but there are so many women that are attracted just by virtue of the fact.
I don't like them that
bad. Ultimate bad boys. I mean,
I mean, look at the guy. I mean,
look at Manson. He was just going to get married,
Manson,
wasn't he?
Manson and Speck, all those guys.
No, Richard
bars.
Speck did not have people after him.
Yeah, women loved him
until he got that fake pair of breasts.
Yeah. Yep.
That was the most disturbing video I've ever seen in my life.
Of him kind of making time with another inmate, and he was transitioning, right? Wasn't he transitioning to be a woman at that point?
I don't think so, Bill. I think he just got him because, you know, I'm going to be locked up. May as well get a couple of fun bags.
I guess.
It was on video. We saw that. That was the most bizarre thing. Who paid for that surgery?
Yeah. I know.
I'm serious. That is some... What's wrong
strange.
With this country? I'm voting for Donald Trump.
All right.
That'll never
it's come
happen
to
again.
That. It's come to that. All right. Now, here's what I have found. This is by way of Huffington Post. I'll just set this up, and then I can tell you later on. They say over at Huffington Post that even though O.J. Simpson's TV movie, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, is done, there's a bunch of stuff that happened in the aftermath that was not covered. You know, at the very end, I hate to ruin this, but just really quickly, they kind of show you at the very end what happened to that guy, what happened to that girl,
what have they done since.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of stuff, some major things that they left out, so I'll cover those in a little bit. I remembered some of these. I didn't remember all of these, so we'll go through those next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. If you are just joining us, we're talking about the fact that the movie... the TV miniseries, I guess, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, ended last week on Tuesday, a couple days ago. So now what happens? Well, over at Huffington Post, they pointed out that a lot did happen after the trial was over. Some major, major things happened, and they kind of chronicle them for you. The court case itself ended on October the 3rd of 1995. Yeah, it's been that long. So what happened right after? Now, this first one they touch on a little bit in the miniseries. A huge champagne party at O.J. Simpson's house.
Well, wouldn't you have
Gigantic.
One?
Well, it kind of got out of hand. It says after the verdict was handed down, the West LAPD had to send police units over to O.J. Simpson's house for crowd control and protect the estate while they were preparing for a party to celebrate what was essentially the deaths of two people.
And it was so split. There were, we all really, truly thought OJ was fantastic. He was a great athlete. He seemed like a great guy. He was funny in the Naked Gun movies.
Towering Inferno.
Yeah.
Roots.
He really was. People loved him.
Rental car commercials.
Hurts.
Yeah.
Right? Running through the airport.
Yeah.
And when this went down and the verdict was read, it's like it was so split 50-50. You had people who still adored him and didn't believe he did it. And the other half was of the people were just like, oh my God, justice has not been served. Mm. I can't believe he got away with this. So it was crazy.
And a lot of that was divided by racial lines.
Yes.
They make a little bit of a point in it in the TV movie, in the TV series. But I do remember at the time, it seemed like, for the most part, African Americans were on the side of, you got to let OJ go, he didn't do this, and white Americans were on the side of, I don't care who he is, he should be in jail.
But you know what really hit home while watching this miniseries, and I don't recall this that much in 95 when I was watching it.
Yeah.
It didn't strike a nerve as much as it does now. You have the African Americans going for their guy, O.J. Simpson, because of the racial discrimination in the police department.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you do look at it, and Johnny Cochran had to stage O.J.'s house, because O.J. wasn't your typical black guy. A lot of people said he's like a white guy. He has no black friends. It's all white people.
Yeah.
So it just because of the racial divide in the way the police department handled things.
Yeah.
That's why it was just so crazy.
It also came on the heels of the Rodney King story.
Yes.
So the timing of it was influenced,
really,
certainly.
A bad few years.
All right, now one day later, and I do remember this, because during the trial, of course, you couldn't talk to O.J. Simpson. You know, he was behind bars,
right.
So you couldn't interview him. Larry King, on an almost nightly basis... the gist of Larry King's talk show was about the OJ trial. He had people on discussing what was going on, pros and cons of the trial, on an almost nightly basis. And actually, Larry King, again on the TV show, plays himself.
And that's what he did. Barry Sheck was on
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
The guy, I can't think of his name, who played Larry in the Three Stooges movie. What character was that?
Evan Handler was, I'm blanking on his name too.
I can't. Dershowitz.
Alan Dershowitz, right.
I mean, we saw these people on Larry King all the time, and that's like, I never watched Larry King prior to that.
Yeah. Well, on the night after the sentencing, he's got, again, his topic is the trial, and he's got Johnny Cochran on as a guest, and then somebody calls up the show while he's interviewing Johnny Cochran. We have a little bit of the audio. Listen.
Please understand that we will be going a little over, because with us on the phone now is O.J. Simpson. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and one, I want to thank you a lot, because so many of my friends have told me that you've been fair in hosting your show and bringing the points of view from both sides. I want to thank Mr. Calhoun for taking the time out of his life. I know it had to be tough for him, and most of all, I want to thank that man, Mr. Johnny Cochran, for believing from the beginning, listening, and putting his heart and soul on the line to send me home and spend time that I'm spending right now with my kids. As I say all of this, you know, I've been watching your show, and I don't really have a lot to say now. And pretty soon, I have enough to say to everybody, and hopefully answer everyone's questions. But one of your callers, a lady, called a minute ago, and she asked a question about a shadowy figure running down the hall. I mean, running down the driveway and across the lawn,
yeah,
and into the front door. Let me say that was, to me, that's one of the problems. One of the problems I'm having today with people who followed this trial, they have not listened to the evidence. Marcia Clark said a person ran across the driveway. Marcia Clark has said that all along. That is not what Alan Park said. Alan Park said 15 feet roughly from my front door, which was me walking out of my front door, dropping my bags and going back in. He marked it. They put a display up, put an X. She asked them, put an X where you saw this person. 15 feet, never on the driveway, never coming down the driveway, never crossing a driveway. That is the testimony. And throughout this case, it's been this misrepresentation time and time again. People come home from work and they hear the pundits elaborating on these.
To me, what's most interesting about that is, number one, I don't think Larry King knew that was coming, even though Larry King had devoted months, and all of a sudden the guy you've been talking about, he's right there. All right, so you
trying
hear
to get it, his last word in again.
Yeah, yeah. You hear it in O.J. Simpson's voice. The first few seconds are extremely genuine and grateful and thankful that Larry, as he said, has been very fair when talking about the case. And then O.J. goes into hyper mode where he gets very angry and very
agitated, defensive
very quickly,
yep,
didn't he?
And of maybe, Marcia Clark.
Yes, yes. And maybe I was trying to think, because I remember when that first played out in 1995, and then I listened to it again today, and his call goes on for a few more minutes. But I was thinking, yeah, maybe I'd be the same way after being caged up. And yeah, I mean, you could debate all day long how guilty or not guilty he was, but let's go with he wasn't guilty, because that's the way the jury found him. You can understand where he'd be a little bit upset, but he switches gears very, very quickly.
I was anxious to hear more of it. I was sorry to hear it.
It
I mean, what
on,
else does he say?
It's kind of more of the same about how people have misrepresented him. And that, you know, he was listening. A caller had called in earlier. I don't have the tape of that. A caller had called in earlier, and O.J. didn't see it exactly the way the caller did. So he's upset that this is the way people are perceiving him now.
And how weird is it? Like, just think about it. I mean, I know he's Larry King, and a lot of people listen and watch him.
Sure.
But to think, you know, O.J.'s just sitting there watching TV, watching right, Larry King, and he's like, you know, that person you had on a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know if it sunk into Larry King's head, like, holy crap, O.J. watches this show?
Right, right, right.
Well, it's just, he really went off on Marcia Clark. And, I mean, I know what we're seeing is based on this book written by, I don't know, and you'd think I'd know it after seeing
Jeffrey
it 100
Tobin.
Times.
Yeah.
You know, and you can order the book at Amazon, you know, that was going through it.
Right.
But Marcia Clark could not do anything. I mean, everything kept going wrong.
Well,
everything.
No one thought if you know the story, you know Mark Furman's background. Nobody anticipated. And, you know, it was such a fluke of the opposite of luck.
Johnny Cochran warned Chris Darden, don't get. But see, now I don't know if that's true either. This is a fabricated story based on an actual event.
Right.
I also,
pretty entertaining, though.
Oh, extremely. I also want to give some props, as the kids like to say, to somebody else who got to talk to O.J. Simpson not long after this. Our own Steve Cochran was one of the very few people who was able to secure an interview. He had him on the radio at another radio station here in town right after that happened. Very hard to pull that off, but he was somehow able to do it. It's a great interview. I know it's available somewhere. I'm not sure where to tell you to go to hear it, but Steve did a really good job talking to him, interviewing him.
We remind ourselves to ask Cochran tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it should be up at WGNRadio.com.
I know. I was thinking the same thing.
Does he have an archivist?
I don't know what religion Steve is.
No, does he have someone who archived his shows?
Maybe.
Because wouldn't that be terrible?
Yeah, if they lost that.
All the great stuff that you and I did, like, how many years ago? 22 years ago?
On the old DuPont network.
No, they're in my basement in the crawl space on Betamax.
This is the great stuff you did yesterday we don't have.
Right.
We don't need that.
None of that's available.
Can I just tell you about yesterday's show very quickly?
Yeah.
We were talking about... we had a silly show yesterday. It was a rainy day. I wish we would have kept with the silliness today, but, you know, we decided after our meeting.
Right. That there should be more structure.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to Jimmy Mack last night about, you know, we were talking about burgers and McDonald's. You could get, you and Steve both said you could get a burger, fries, and a Coke for under $1. I didn't remember that. Mm-hmm. Jim was like, oh, yeah, totally. And Dylan, who's 13, says, this is what you guys talk about on the air?
Yes.
And Jim says, isn't it great that mom and her friends can just sit around and talk about burgers and get paid for it?
Yeah.
So now I'm feeling even more guilty.
Wait, you get paid for this? Because I have to go. A quick break, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's a rainy, ugly, moody day, and I keep thinking the sun's going to come out, and I feel like it's coming over the Kemper building. Doesn't it kind of look like it?
Yeah, it looks like it, but it's
not going to.
It's teasing us. It's pointing and teasing us. You know who's in trouble, Wendy? This is sad. The Gap is in trouble. Have you ever been to the Gap?
The Gap came up earlier. I worked at the Gap. That was one of my retail sale jobs at North Riverside Park.
That's a long time ago, though.
Especially for you.
I remember
those
commercials.
County seat, I'll tell you that.
No.
I had a friend, Vicky, who worked at County Seat. I had a couple other girls that worked. We all had jobs at the mall.
A couple girls who worked.
We had a lot of friends.
When you worked at the Gap, did they tell you when people were shopping for clothes to tell them that you just put, like, if somebody's trying out a shirt, did they instruct you to say, that shirt is very popular? I myself just purchased that same shirt.
We could only wear stuff that we sold at the Gap.
Yeah, that's common. But anytime I shop there, if I'm looking at pants or a shirt or something, they go, we're selling a lot of those.
No one has ever said that to me.
No?
And you bring this up often.
It's so weird.
You must look like a lost soul when you're shopping.
Oh, you can't believe. Anytime I shop, people always come up in a store and they'll go, are you okay? Is everything?
Are you lost, little boy?
It happens to me all the time. I don't know why.
Yeah, nobody talks to me because I am on a mission.
Yeah, we're selling a lot of pants here.
Steve, have you ever had this happen?
Zippers.
It happens in other places too, but especially at the Gap. Let's just as basic a shirt as you want, black polo shirt.
Right.
Someone come up and go, we're selling those like crazy, those black polo shirts. I just bought that black polo shirt. You should get a black polo shirt.
You know, if I heard that, that would turn me off a little.
It does.
Right? Steve, have you ever heard that, Chapman? Because I swear to God, no one has ever said that to me.
I don't know what it is about me. I get it all the time.
Yeah, I can see what they're saying. Oh, yeah, those are very popular.
Right, as if to say, like, I'm on the edge of, has anyone ever worn a black polo shirt before, or will I be the first? No, sir, people wear them all the time. You should get one.
No one has ever done that.
I get it all the time.
I want the black polo shirt with the little pink X in the back.
Could you do that for me?
And then would they say, oh, we're selling a lot of those? Like, well, I'm not going to buy that.
Right, that everybody has one.
Everyone's got that X.
Right.
What little pink X?
Making it
just
up.
Hypothetically.
Oh, now I'm thinking I want it.
No, they don't really make those.
$25.95, I'll give you one.
I already bought Jim a pair of shoes that Kevin has and Steve Bertrand has.
Mm-hmm.
They can all wear them together. And you make fun of me and Kristen Decker.
No,
I get
them on Mondays and Wednesdays. Kevin's got Tuesday, Thursday, so Jim could have them for the weekend.
Wouldn't that be nice? They're all scheduled.
Skechers.
All right, here's why the Gap is in trouble. They've put out an ad, and what they have in the ad is four girls posed in gymnastic-style poses, okay? And they're young girls. They're between the ages of 5 and 14. They're with a group called
Le Petit Cirque, which even though I don't speak French, I think means the little circus.
Very good.
Does that mean the little circus? All right. So you got four girls. They're between the age, right. Between the ages of 5 and 14. Some of them contorted. Like one of them is upside down. She's on her hands.
And her legs are like a pretzel.
Yeah. Her legs are above her in a pretzel. Now, the girls in the middle, you have one of the taller, older girls, and she's just kind of standing there. And she's resting her arm on another one of the girls, right? On one of the younger, smaller girls.
Which you do a lot of times, families do that if you're posing for a picture. If you're taller, you kind of put your elbow on the shorter kid's head.
Right.
It's not like it's new. People right. have been doing that for ages.
So, right. So you say to yourself, oh, and then the fourth girl I didn't mention also doing gymnastic poses. So you've got two girls on the extreme left and the extreme right. Posed gymnastically.
How do you know their political beliefs?
I'm just guessing by looking at them. I'm just guessing. And then the two girls in the middle, as described, the taller girl kind of just resting on the shorter girl. So you say to yourself, well, why would the gap be in trouble for that? That seems fairly innocuous. Who's being hurt by that, right? The problem is, or some what some perceive the problem to be is, the taller, older girl who is resting on the younger, shorter girl, the taller girl is white. The shorter girl is black, and people are perceiving this as being racist in some way, as if to say that one girl, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I'll find it for you in a second, is being used. Oh, here it is. The Gap tweeted the photo on April the 2nd with the caption, meet the kids that are proving that girls can do anything. And while the ad was supposed to be empowering, many noted on social media the black girl was being used as a prop or a piece of furniture.
Oh, seriously? I really have had it.
Now,
if she was laying on the floor like an ottoman and they put a drink on her, that is a prop or a piece of furniture. They're just kids hanging out.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Kristen Savely of the website The Root noted that the ad is what happens when black faces appear but no black voices are at the table. Now, I do want to say this, and I've read this, and this story is on several different websites. The one I'm telling you about right now is on USA Today. The Gap had a very similar ad 2 years ago that included more kids, and in that ad, it was the tallest kid in that ad was a black girl, and she was resting on a shorter girl who was white. And they received not a single complaint of any kind from anybody. But because the roles are reversed here, there has been a lot of talk saying you're really not treating that one girl, the black girl, with the same respect as the other girls.
Get the black girl's opinion on this. Does she feel like she's a prop? You know, seriously, Bill, you asked me in the office what's wrong with this Gap ad. So I was looking like, what's wrong? Did they spell something wrong on a shirt? Then I thought maybe the legs of the girl standing on her head and the pretzel leg position, I thought maybe her feet were superimposed
inverted
on
somehow.
Backwards yeah. or something. And then when you told me, I couldn't believe it. This is Ellen DeGeneres' line at the Gap.
Yeah.
And
And if you know anything about Ellen DeGeneres, if you watch her with any regularity, believe me when I tell you Ellen DeGeneres is not out to hurt anybody racially or any other way. She's just the opposite of that. And I don't know that she has any approval at all. What happens a lot of times with bigger name people is they lend their names to something and it kind of goes that far. They don't show her proofs of the pictures and say, Ellen, we want to publish this ad. What do you think? It probably doesn't get to that point.
No, and there's a picture that she tweeted with the same girls and the little black girls in the middle. Is there a problem with the position she's in there?
No, I don't think so.
Should she not be in the middle?
I don't think so.
I really, this isn't fair. I feel like, seriously, it's not fair at all.
All right, now take this into account for just a little bit. I saw the story yesterday afternoon, and I saw the pictures accompanying the story. And I had a hard time finding anything wrong with it. I just went, this is just a pose. It has nothing to do with race whatsoever. It's just four girls posing. That's it. But then I thought to myself, if I was an African-American person and I saw this, I could see why possibly they might be offended. Could you see that at all?
No, I would say, thank God, there's one of us in the ad. Seriously.
Yeah.
Because that's what the Gap is saying, too, that they're just, Debbie Felix, a spokesperson for Gap Kids, apologized for any offense caused, said the company will remove the image in question from the campaign, which I think is ridiculous.
They did it immediately. They pulled it immediately.
So good for them that they're seeing some complaint. And
right.
Some people would say they're giving in. You know what? They're just trying to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
So they did the right thing. She told the Daily Mail, as a brand with a proud 46-year history of championing diversity and inclusivity, we appreciate the conversation that has taken place and are sorry to anyone we have offended.
Which is probably, if you're on the PR side of this, I think that's probably the right way to have done it. I don't know what they could have done better. Can you?
Wrong with this picture. If I was I'm the mother of two boys. I'm going to say it's sexist. Why isn't there a boy in the picture?
You could make that same argument.
But why would
I? Right. So if you're them, if you're the Gap, because I think they handled it well.
Totally perfect.
Do you try in any way, shape, or form to say, look, we appreciate your concerns, but in all honesty, we're going to stand up for our ad. We don't see anything wrong with it. We're not trying in any way, shape, or form to say, look, this girl, the white girl, is the better kid and the other one is a prop. They're not saying that. So would they have even tried that? Because I think they did it the right way by pulling the ad and apologizing and saying, look, if you're offended, we didn't mean to do it. No more ad. Don't worry about it.
I can be outraged because I'm not responsible for any of this. I'm not at the Gap. I'm not people complaining.
Yeah.
I'm just, you ask my opinion, I'm telling you my opinion. I'm bothered by this. But I think the Gap did the right thing because they don't want issues.
No. It's the last thing they want.
The customer's always right in their eyes. And they've done a pretty remarkable job of showing diverse models throughout all their years in the Gap.
Remember not long ago, they were one of the first to start using like models in wheelchairs and stuff.
Yep.
That's becoming more commonplace. But a couple of years ago, you just didn't see that much.
I think they did the right thing because it's not worth arguing because you're never going to change anyone's mind. And if somebody disagrees with me, they can tell me they disagree and I'll go, okay, well, we agree to disagree because you're not going to change anyone's mind. But it's an advertisement for clothing. And it what I saw was four girls going, oh my God, they are limber. I could never be that limber. That's really
I
saw.
That was what their hope was. That was what their intention was. There was no hidden meaning in any of this.
But different people see things through different eyeballs, right, Nancy?
How about looking at it this way? The black girl is holding up the white girl.
Without her, she would fall down.
You could,
There you go.
You could see it
there
that way. You did see it that way.
But it shouldn't.
Well, I haven't seen it, but it makes sense to me. What difference does it make who's on the top or who's on the bottom? They're supporting each other.
Amen. I like the way you think, Nancy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Appreciate it. All right.
I was looking at the colors of the shirts. I was looking at the patterns. I wasn't looking at the skin color of any of these girls.
Right.
In fact, there's one girl I thought was a boy. And now that there isn't.
The upside down girl?
I'm not going to reveal which one.
All right.
But I'm going to say, you know, since there aren't any boys in here and I'm the mother of two boys, I'm going to write the Gap and say completely, add a boy to this.
A boy in there. In la petite cirque. Did I say that right?
That doesn't even matter.
I don't know
if
I did. All right.
Somebody will complain about it anyway, Bill.
A break. if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. More show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Talking about a Gap ad that is out there where it shows four tweens, let's say.
Limber tweens. And I rarely use the term limber tweens, which is a political affiliation. You know that.
You've offended me with that.
I don't blame you.
There are three white girls and a black girl, and there is a taller white girl leaning her elbow on a shorter black girl, and there are people that are up in arms saying that the Gap ad is racist, and they actually took it down.
They said that the girl was being used as a prop and a piece of furniture, and they wouldn't stand for it. Now, there's another twist to the story that we can tell you in a little bit. A couple people want to call in and check in on this, but there's another interesting twist to the story.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
What's going on? What are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are, you know, I listen to you guys every day.
I feel a big butt coming.
Thank you.
Half the time I can't get through, but people got to get a life. This is ridiculous. No matter what commercials you throw at me, I can find something politically wrong with it.
Sure, of course.
If you want to send me Keebler Elves? What are you picking on small people for? Jolly Green Giant, what are you picking on the big guys for? You know what I mean?
It's like, I agree with you, Dan. It's gotten completely over the top. It's just gone on. It's too much.
It's just ridiculous. You know, it makes you want to throw your phone away, not watch TV, and just go live up in the north woods with a grizzly bear.
Come on, it's not that bad, Dan. You can keep your phone and play Candy Crush Saga with me and forget about everybody else.
Oh, I ain't got enough time for that. That's garbage, too.
All right. Bye, Dan. Right. Thanks for
calling.
Thank
you, Dan. We appreciate it.
Can we get one more in?
Please.
Connie, what do you think?
I think that these people are out of their minds. Why is everything an issue? That's my question. Why is everything an issue? It's just an ad.
That's
I'm looking at the clothes.
They're just showing some people in some clothes.
Right.
It was about the outfits. It wasn't about... I don't mean to go crazy, but I'm tired of this stupidness.
Right.
I am so with you.
It's just... It makes you laugh out loud. Because like Dan just said, they need to get a life. Quit trying to critique things that don't need to be.
I was looking at the clothes the kids were wearing. I got to be honest with you, I didn't notice the color of the kids.
Because all I said to you was, the Gap is under some pressure for this ad. Tell me what you think is wrong with it. And you studied it, and you went, I don't know what's wrong.
I thought they spelled something wrong. There's something that says adventure on one of the T-shirts. I'm like, did they spell that wrong?
Right, what is it? It was nothing.
Agreed.
Thank you, Connie.
Thank you, Connie.
And tell people about this interesting twist, because I love this.
All right, the interesting twist is this. Now, as I pointed out, there are four girls in this ad. They're with a gymnastics troupe called Le Petit Cirque. That's French for the little circus, you know.
Le Petit Cirque.
Yeah, that's what it is in French. So you got a girl on the left, and she's doing a gymnastics move, and a girl on the right, and she's bending and stretching, and then these two girls in the middle. The taller, oldest girl, who is white, and then the shorter, youngest girl, who is black. The white girl is resting her arm on the head of the black girl, but it's not meant in any way, shape, or form to be subservient. All it is saying there's four kids posing.
And one,
that's it.
In every family photo or back even in history in basketball photos of men, you would see a taller person frequently put their elbow on the shorter person's head just to show, hey, look, I'm taller.
Right.
It's like a goof pose.
Right. So, subliminally, does this show any kind of inequality between the races? Well, here's the interesting twist involved here. The two girls in the middle, the taller white girl and the shorter black girl, are in fact sisters. Lucy and Fanny are their names. They are Brooke Smith's daughters.
Which we weren't sure who she was. We went on to look, and she was the young girl who was abducted in Silence of the Lambs.
She's an actress.
Yes. Yeah. Put the lotion in the basket. She was the girl like in that little hole.
Yeah.
And she was also on ER. She played a doctor on ER. And those are her daughters.
They are. The taller girl, the older girl, is her daughter naturally, and then the younger daughter is by way of adoption.
From Ethiopia.
But in reality, those girls are sisters, which makes this story, this complex story, even just a little bit more complex, doesn't it?
Well, it makes it great and good for The Gap for just, you know what, you're not going to win an argument. So if you have a big business and you're trying to sell something and someone's offended, you know what? You say, sorry, didn't mean to offend you, we'll change it.
Yep. The person who runs the small circus, say it in French for me,
because I can't. Le Petit Cirque.
That one exactly, is a woman named Natalie Gauthier, and she says, the child in the ad is not an armrest, quote-unquote. She's the other girl's little sister. They are a very close family. The child is a very young member of the French circus that Wendy just told you about, a humanitarian cirque company, and therefore a wee shyer than the more seasoned, older, outgoing girls. Those are the other three girls in the ad. Our company is deeply saddened by some people misconstruing this as racist and are keeping the children out of this for the moment to protect their beautiful feelings. But we are extremely supportive of our dialogue in our country to move past any racial barriers.
I hate that The Gap had to do something about it, but I understand.
Yeah.
Again, when you're a business and you've pissed someone off,
yeah,
you don't want to piss them off more.
Agreed.
So Le Petit
Cirque.
That's how you say it.
Le Petit
Cirque.
That's it. That's how you pronounce it.
Is that you?
Yeah, that's me on there.
You moonlight?
Yeah. Do I? You have no idea. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Every once in a while, we like to get serious on this very show, and we'd like to introduce to you a woman we've spoken to before. Her name is Erin Marin, and she is the founder and president of Erin's Law. And Erin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and before we get started, we have an empowerment summit that is going on that we'll find out about. But please remind us what Erin's Law consists of.
Yeah, Erin's Law requires children in public schools, pre-K to 12th grade, to be taught personal body safety, the differences between safe, unsafe touch, safe, unsafe secrets, you know, empowering kids if you're being abused to speak up and tell.
Now, you are a survivor of sexual assault, and I just know that taking my kids to the pediatrician for their yearly checkups every year, it's a female pediatrician. I love her to death. I have two boys, and I right in front of me and real calmly and just normally said, you know, boys, this is a private area. No one can touch these areas except your parents and a doctor, and just really matter-of-factly bringing things up, which my kids kind of giggled at, but she says it every year at their yearly checkup, and that's something that needs to be talked about.
Oh, no, definitely. Like I said, so often parents only talk to their kids about stranger danger. So if the pediatrician isn't talking to kids about it, where else are they going to get this material?
Erin,
parents, you know, aren't saying anything to children about it.
Remind me, and forgive me for not remembering, but if my memory does serve me correctly, roughly half the states right now are involved with Erin's Law. We're getting about 25, 26 states, right? Has that changed at all?
Last week it passed in Maryland, making it the 27th state.
Okay, that's good news. That's very good news.
Yeah,
and is there any evidence to show that in the states that are conforming with the law, with Erin's Law, I'm hoping that we're getting some good results? Are we?
Oh yeah,
good.
We last spring had a man in Algonquin who was sentenced to 40 years in prison after two little girls, cousins, both taught Erin's Law the same week. Both came forward after being taught it that their uncle was abusing them. I got a call 2 weeks ago here in Illinois from another agency of a little girl who told her mother twice that she was being sexually abused by her father. Mother did nothing, silenced her own child. Believe it or not, that happens a lot. And then they were taught Erin's Law in school, and the little girl disclosed to her school social worker teacher, and the kids, her siblings were removed from the home, and the perpetrator father was arrested.
You know, people, I know it's terrible that the mom didn't believe her daughter, but it's like your defense mechanisms come up. You can't even comprehend that would be true, I would imagine.
You can't. In fact, I was talking to my dad about this last night that, you know, there are parents out there that moms don't assume, you know, the person they married, the father of their children, would do something like this. And when this comes out, so often they panic and end up, you know, often sweeping it under the rug because of the financial situation, because they're going to be put on the streets, because it's going to be this financial burden because the father is the breadwinner in the family. How are we going to survive without him? So I hear horror stories of these kids coming to me saying, Erin, I did disclose, but but my mother didn't believe me. And she told me that if I repeated this, that we would be we'd be homeless, that I'd be put in foster care, that I would never see her again, silencing these kids again. And I see it over and over and over again, which is why we have to bring the message into the schools so kids disclose there instead of just at home.
Bill and I were just talking about this a couple of weeks ago. When we went to elementary school, there was a school nurse. That was it. Now you have a school nurse. There's usually a school psychologist, a social worker, various other people. And Erin's Law not only teaches students in grades pre-K through 12th grade age-appropriate techniques to recognize child sexual abuse and to tell an adult about it, but you're also training school personnel and parents, like you just said, of this mother who didn't believe her daughter, about the warning signs. What are some of them that we should be looking for?
I often tell parents, you know, all of a sudden the changes in the grades, the kids that are wearing layers of clothes that weren't before, kids often are trying to protect themselves by wearing layers and layers. The child that wasn't bedwetting that suddenly just starts wetting the bed or having accidents. You know, the depression, the withdrawn, avoiding someone. You know, that uncle that they never had a problem with and suddenly at family gatherings doesn't want to go by them. The babysitter, the child does not want to go see anymore. You know, if there's a, all of a sudden a relationship change with a child and a person, that should be a red flag right there. What's going on here? Why is this kid avoiding this situation?
And what do you do if your child, God forbid, does come up to you and say, you know, Dad or Mom or Uncle Pete is doing something terrible to me? Do you go to the police right away? What do you do?
Yes. I tell every parent you go to the authorities immediately because the likelihood is that uncle, that babysitter, that coach is molesting other children. You got to put a stop to this. You can't sit here and just think we're going to keep it in the family and handle this way. You got to go to the authorities. There is a crime that has been committed. You have to go to the authorities.
So don't confront that person, correct, Aaron? Go to the police. That's the way to play it.
Do not confront that person. And that's why it's so important that we train our educators on this because they're not properly trained. As mandated reporters, I can't tell you the horror stories of teachers, school personnel. When a child discloses in school, instead of contacting the authorities, instead of calling the DCFS hotline, they're calling mom at work and saying, your child is saying their stepfather is doing this. What is any mother going to do? She's going to confront the perpetrator right away. And before the authorities get involved the next day interviewing the kid at school or in a children's advocacy center, this kid has been back in the home and is now recanting because they've been threatened all over again and now terrified.
Aaron, I and you can tell as much or as little as you want, but was this a family member that abused you?
I was actually had two perpetrators in my life. One was a neighbor that lived up the street from me, new, and the other, we moved, and at age 11, I woke up to an older cousin sexually abusing me for 2 years, and, you know, I never got that lesson on how to speak up and tell. The only reason I broke my silence at 13 is because he was also molesting my little 11-year-old sister.
God. So therapy and time and helping others is how you're getting through this. Tell us about the Empowerment Summit that is going on.
Yeah, so on April 30th from 10 a.m. to 4, and then in the evening there's a concert. It's an Empowerment Summit all on wellness topics. It's not just for sexual assault survivors. It's on healing, meditation, you know, mental health experts, chiropractors, nutritionists, all these different professionals are coming together throughout the day. And then myself and Angela Rose, who founded PAVE, she was a survivor of sexual assault, kidnapped from Woodfield Mall by a convicted rapist murderer. Her and myself will be speaking at this event. And like I said, it's from 10 a.m. to 4. Its tickets are $15, which include lunch. And then in the evening, which is really exciting, American Idol's, she was third runner-up, Haley Reinhart, who's actually a local from around here, is putting on, and, you know, you hear about her on the radio all the time. I'm sure, you know, she's playing everywhere with her new song that's out. She's going to be performing Wedding Band.
Wedding Band is great. They're really good.
And this is all happening starting at 8 p.m. that evening at Dirty Nellie's. So the entire event takes place at Dirty Nellie's, and it's being put on by Healthy Living Counseling Center, who's joined forces with me, PAVE, and Suburban Woman Newspaper. And the money that is being raised towards this entire event is all going towards Aaron's Law and PAVE, both nonprofits. And we're going to use these funds to help empower kids, empower young adults on how to speak out, break the silence, and educate them. We're putting together all this educational material so that we can continue this message on this silent epidemic that so often we're not hearing about. I mean, the statistics you hear of sexual assault going on in high schools and colleges is sickening. And we need to empower these girls, these men, to speak up and tell. And if people want to learn more details about it, about the entire event, you can go to Empowerment Summits, with an S at the end, .com. And it gives all the rest of the details about the event. But like I said, it starts at 10 a.m., at Dirty Nellie's in Palatine.
That's a fun place.
And yes, it is.
And now your website is aaronslaw.org. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep, ericslaw.org.
Erin Marin, you've done a wonderful thing to help other survivors of sexual assault. You are the founder and president of Erin's Law. And just finally, before we let you go, I know your healing continues, and if there's any victim out there right now who's listening, perhaps they feel guilt and feel they themselves are to blame, a message to them right now that it's not their fault.
Oh, I always tell survivors, this isn't your fault. Don't point the finger at yourself, even if you had family members turn your backs on you. You know, the stigma, the shame, the best thing you can do for yourself is break the silence. Reclaim your voice, and that's what I learned in my life. You know, my innocence was stolen, my trust was taken, but the one thing I reclaimed from my perpetrators is my voice, and now I'm being a voice for the voiceless because there are millions of others out there that need to be heard. And, you know, my message I often give survivors is you can get to that place, too. You can get to that place of moving forward in your life and not allowing this thing to be a negative event in your life the rest of your life. I've turned it into something positive, doing something good or something tragic.
You are so inspirational. You really are, Erin. We thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thanks, Erin.
And thank you for bringing awareness to it. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Erin Marin, you can go to erinslaw.org and find out all about Erin's Law. And April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. And if you're all the signs that she mentioned, you can find that on erinslaw.org and attend the Empowerment Summit. I believe the information for that will be on erinslaw.org as well.
Yep. All right. A quick break, a little bit more show, and then Ro and Anna join you in just a little while. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Throw something out here.
Yes.
I mentioned something about taking my kids to the pediatrician. They're 16 and 13, and somebody has texted that I should cut the umbilical cord, and why do you still take them to a pediatrician? Is there an age limit to stop your kids going to a pediatrician?
I think it varies from pediatrician to pediatrician. Don't they set the rule for that? Sometimes it's 13, 14, 15. Sometimes it's 18, right?
I asked our pediatrician when my kids were born, how long do you typically go to a pediatrician?
Yeah.
And she said, we have some kids who still go here through college, sometimes to 21, sometimes it's 18, sometimes. Because there are doctors that, you know, I know with children psychologists, they don't see them, or psychiatrists, they don't see. Some kids don't get to see. They just treat adults. A pediatrician, I thought you go till you're 18. And does it matter? Am I not cutting the umbilical cord? I've asked my kids, would you rather go to a guy doctor? And they said, no, we've been with this doctor forever.
Yeah.
Dr. Franco's great. Let's keep going.
So what will there be? There has to be some time, though, where you go, okay, you're 45.
When they're in
you
their 30s, I think it would be weird.
Yeah, that would be too much, right?
I would imagine 21 when they get, or 18, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's, I guess, in most cases, isn't it around 18?
I don't know.
Yeah.
People are so very quick to criticize. Would you rather me not take my kids to a doctor at all? I mean, what? Is that wrong?
No, but I'm not defending whoever. That was a text? Was that by way of text? All right. Maybe in that person's instance, they stopped. I think a lot of people stop around 13 or 14 or 15.
My kids are 18 and 20 and still go to the pediatrician.
Oh, so, all right.
My kids went to their pediatrician until they were 18.
Yeah. I still go to Kid Snips for haircuts.
That's totally different.
I think they do a nice job, and then I get a donut when I'm done.
The most important thing is the child is comfortable. When they go to college, somebody said, is when they gave up their pediatrician. That's what I assumed, because then they're not home anymore.
Right.
I asked the same question of my pediatrician, and he said oftentimes he sees kids through college or until they start feeling uncomfortable.
Oh. All right.
I guess it would come to be a weird time if, you know, your kids are growing up and perhaps they want to deal with birth control and they say, I don't know, I got to make an appointment with my pediatrician. Perhaps their girlfriend or boyfriend will go, really? You still go to a pediatrician?
Well, there's no better form of birth control than sitting in the waiting room at a pediatrician's office.
Amen.
Just sit in there for a couple minutes. That'll make up your mind very quickly.
Amen,
right,
Bill.
How about this? We'll do a quick break. Ro and Ann will be by.
I'm going to give you a sucker.
I get a sucker for that. This has been a good day. Ro and Ann will be by in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.